Way, way back in 2005, came together two awesome guys. One was Siege and the other Devin, and they became the best of friends. 12 years later, we're still talking, but now we're recording what we say. Games and TV, books and movies, really anything okay? Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a very special episode of The Say Report. I'm your host companion, Devin Decker, and joining me, my host companion, Sejan Sarawick. Sejan?
The hell, man? I thought we weren't doing characters this time.
Well, I didn't want to overwhelm anybody who's here from the Adam Sandler cinematic universe, because this is our very first crossover episode, and That's cool, right? But I didn't want to surprise anybody. I mean, the song was probably jarring enough in the beginning, right? Me doing a cover of the Clone High theme song. I mean, you're here for Adam Sandler. You're not really here for, well, everything, which is what the Say Report specializes in. So Sejan is right. There's not going to be characters for this part of it, but there's a reason we're talking about Jack and Jill, because Sejan and I are both going to be playing dual roles as both host companion and co-curators.
And we're some real characters.
Did you see the pool? They flipped the bitch. All right. So we're being rude because in addition to Sejan and I, because it's a very special episode of the Say Report, because he is one of the main reasons that we decided to chart the Adam Sandler cinematic universe, and because he won't shut up about the quiz he wrote about Adam Sandler, we are joined this week, not just in archival footage, but by the man himself, Quizmaster General Will Fournier. Will, how you doing, my friend?
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everybody out there. You won't have known this because it's an audio medium we're working on here, but I saluted when you said Quizmaster, and I feel that's important.
Oh, were we not supposed to be doing that? I've been saluting since the beginning.
You're the Quizmaster General. That's what you deserve, is a salute. Anything else wouldn't do.
It's just a Boy Scout salute, though. In three fingers, you know. I'm not giving you a full... Not American honors, my friend.
No, that's okay. I mean, it would be... I mean, now, is it a salute in the way that, like, in How I Met Your Mother, they would do that General Recklessness salute?
I'm just trying to figure out if there's a specific, like, salute I'm supposed to give you. Like, am I supposed to flip my hand upside down?
Can you make your fingers you a make Q?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's good. Yes, you do the three fingers, but the thumb and the first finger form what is almost a Q.
I hate the letter Q. Fantastic. Just this is going to be my place to say the letter Q. It thinks it's so like righteous with its cute little tail. The letter Q can fuck right off. I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna be incendiary.
Here to hear, folks. We said Q can fuck right off. Take that, Q.
It's definitely earlier in the alphabet than I ever feel it should be. Like it feels like one of those W X Y Z kind of ones at the end there. But
I'm
it
just trying to.
It is
I'm
the 17th letter of the alphabet.
I'm trying to like parse out and work in and figure out if you guys saw the announcement today about the new Reno movie or not.
I definitely. I'm very excited to finally rewatch through Reno 911 in preparation for the new film Reno 911 in search of QAnon. The hunt for QAnon. I'm sorry.
I love it.
See, I missed that one, and I am devastated that I missed it, and we'll definitely be searching more about this.
It's crazy because we had a big conversation about Paramount Plus today, Will, and that's where it's
we did discuss Paramount.
Yep.
Yeah.
Only because I was curious about what the mayor of Kingstown was.
Oh. It's the other thing Jeremy Renner's doing right now, that's all.
It's the Yellowstone, but not in a ranch, actually set in like a city. The crazy thing about Mayor...
And Kyle Chenandler Bong, we can't ignore that.
And Diane Wiest.
Hey, I'm a huge Chenandler Bong. We're getting Wiest infections?
Yes, we'll have Wiest infections and Kyle Chenandler Bongs, all in time for Hawkeye without Hawkeye. The crazy thing about that show is apparently... Kingstown is based on a real area of this country, America being the country, where there are 10 prisons that like all sort of abut one another. and like spread out over three different states. And as the mayor of that town that is like up against those prisons, apparently, if you're next to prisons, it just breeds corruption and crime, and he has to deal with that.
Well, I mean, because one has to imagine that 10 prisons in such a small area, one or two of them are probably private.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds problematic. I mean, that many criminals in one area
Well, I
is
mean, it's
always
not even
bad.
that,
I
right?
mean, I know they're
Like,
walled in, but.
no, but it's not
Yeah, it's
it's
not
not even that.
Australia, but.
It's like the idea that, like, yeah, I mean, come on, man. Like, you want to talk
Yeah,
about a
we
bunch of prisoners
start as a
shoved into a
country
small
based on that
space?
kind of stuff.
Yeah,
It's
you
not
guys are
very
doing all
small, really.
right.
It's pretty big area.
That's fair.
Thank
But
you.
like the idea that like maybe, you know, who are the real monsters and all of those great old school tropes, like it, honestly, it's kind of my bread and butter. I'm very excited to watch that show.
I'm excited too, but we will not be starting it in the Decker House until we finish season four of Yellowstone. Because I don't want to get muddied with Taylor Sheridanisms.
Now, do you feel, I mean, this is a crossover episode, so we should probably question this. Will there be a Yellowstone Mayor of Kingstown crossover?
I could see it happening, but Yellowstone is so set in Montana. I think it would be very difficult to have them branch out to anything. Of course, I say that as it's a show that's shot in Utah and has introduced a storyline where Jimmy, who was brought to the ranch to make him a man, is now being sent down to the Four Sixes in Texas. And it really feels like there's going to be some Texas ranching in this season of Yellowstone, which I'm very excited
There's gonna be
about.
some Texas ranch this time around.
Oh, so there'd be a Walker crossover.
Oh man, don't get
Don't
my
do
hopes up like
that.
that.
That's not fair. No way. There's no way. I mean, the CW, it's Paramount, though. And CW is now very much in the pocket of WB. If you want to watch Walker or The Republic of Sarah, both of them are on HBO Max. So that would be moving heaven and earth. That'd be some Spider-Man Multiverse of Madness type shit,
I
which.
mean, they did have Walker, Texas Rangers show up in Crisis on Infinite Earths, and that was really cool. So,
Well, I'm really excited for the Flash Apocalypse episode because I imagine they'll be coming back. Does anyone know about the Flash Apocalypse thing? I have
I
no
unfortunately
idea.
nobody is unfortunately nobody's
Yeah.
watching those shows anymore. But we'll talk more about that on the
On
actual
the
show.
actual show. Maybe we already talked about it because we're recording this out of space and time. Which actually does. I want to ask one question. Will, what time is it for you right now?
It's currently 10:26 a.m. on Thursday, the 18th of November.
So that moment where Will wished everybody good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, that is where all of us are recording from. Will represents the morning. Sijin is still in the tail end of the afternoon, and
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
in
for
the
sure.
evening. That's so fucking cool to me.
Yeah, man.
Like, I was
Yeah,
trying
I'm
to do
excited. I mean,
times. It's a show about everything, so all time zones should be referenced
Now it's a
in
show
the
about
everything.
every when, not just everything. I'm not gonna make every when
Again,
work. I know
I
that,
mean,
so
you're gonna try, though.
that
You're gonna
feels
try.
getting very meta. Not metaverse. That's not a meta, but I worry that we're gonna be too interconnected.
Are we
Is
allowed
Adam
to?
Sandler a meta in this movie? That would explain a lot.
That would explain a whole bunch about this film.
Spelled Jill specifically. Okay, we gotta get into this, boys.
Yeah. So, well, we're not here to talk about the film yet. That's going to happen when we slip on our ties and our co-curator personas. But we are talking about Jack and Jill this episode. And I will say it here. I fucking loved this movie almost in spite of myself.
And
And
I'll
you'll
say this here. Someone had to.
Yeah, I'm more with the Sijin on that side of things. It's been a while since I tried to watch this film, and I think I fell asleep both times.
Yeah, I have to say, firmly in the camp of tried to watch this film is definitely where I'm at. We'll talk more about this. I am never have any interest in like completely crapping on any movie ever, and like there's definitely some really interesting conversations that we get to have about this movie. But boy, Dev, I'm happy to hear you enjoyed it. Actually, I'm really am because the show's always better when somebody's gunning for it.
Yeah, I am very excited for to elaborate on our first impressions that we have shared just now. But you know what we should do? We should probably talk a little bit about the mission of the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe and to the members who are here from the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe side. I'm sorry for the reiteration of it, but I just want to make sure that the Say Report community understands what it is that we're doing once a month. When we get into our magical mystery craft and fly into the Adam Sandler cinematic universe to try to figure out if we can make sense of what's happening there.
More importantly, when you and I actually focus in on something, and I think that alone is going to be strange enough for our Save Report listeners.
Yeah, I somehow we talked about Shrek, the past episode, the past episode, the one called the Disney Plus Report, you know, the episode that was supposed to be all about Disney Plus. We somehow talked about a DreamWorks film. Because, well, I mean, I've told the story, but I needed to get that French speaking trivia team off my back. I was not going to join them. And in true Larry David fashion, I thought, well, I'll make them think I can't speak French, and then they will drop it. And they did. They have unfriended me on Facebook. You've heard this bit in the episode, or maybe you didn't because I forgot to talk about it. But either way, yeah, we drift a little bit on the Say Report, and that's the luxury of a show about everything. But the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe, that's a show about Adam Sandler and his movies. And I need to tell you that in my mind, I just need to share this with you. We're kind of like Super Mario in Super Mario 64, where we're running around a castle, and up on the walls are the posters of the movie, and we dive in.
Very specifically, do a nice little like hop and a flip in and
Yeah.
wahoo.
Yeah, the Wahoo is important. But I
Ba-da-da-da.
think you can also, the Say Report is a show about everything, and in the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe is a show about everything Adam Sandler. You do
Yeah.
still have that nice, little. It's not like you're so far away from where you are, because you talk about Adam Sandler on the Say Report as well, because he's in everything. So that works, and there's plenty of those kind of, I don't know, parallels that do come out. But then, yeah, I feel as we, every now and then I say to Devin, like, what's the plan for this episode? He's like, I have no idea. We're just going to talk. Which is the Say Report side of things. But whereas with Adam Sandler, it's like, we've watched this film, we've made notes, we're doing a thing.
Yeah, I got
Yeah, I mean,
Dunkachinos for everybody in the house.
oh God. But like literally the fact that like I do research at work before we sit down tells you that it's a very different vibe, right?
Yeah. And that's why a
I mean,
very
you guys have
special.
ties.
Yeah, we're taking it seriously. We have ties on. But it makes sense why we would use our crossover time with a very special episode because, I mean, I can't speak for Sijin and I think he just spoke volumes, but the very special episodes are the ones where I usually do some research before them. So are we double dipping a little bit with our Jack and Jill research? Yes. Yes, we are. You try doing a podcast.
Yeah, no, like more to the point, it's also a special episode for that, right? Like anybody that's interested in listening to the Adam Sandler cinematic universe, go and check it out. We did release an episode this month, so it's not like we didn't do like we're half-assing it because we didn't do the job earlier this month. If anything, we're ass and a halfing it, I guess.
Yeah, we're ass and a
Yeah, this
halfing
is
it.
bonus content.
There
What
you go.
if we won all three of the temple games in Hidden Legends of the Hidden Temple? We got the half pendant. We
Don't talk
got
about
enough.
that. That game's scary now. Paramount Plus, you owe me a new pair of underwear.
But yeah, it's we got the half pendant, so we're gonna have three full pendants, kind of. In both Say Report and Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe, but also that's why we try to relegate the Adam Sandler stuff to once a month because we want to make sure that we give it its proper. And also, we don't want to overwhelm you with too much content, right? You're getting an episode of the Say Report every Monday, and then you get your very special episode on the last Thursday. And if you also want to hear us talk about everything Adam Sandler, seriously, Will, why aren't you part of our marketing department? That was a beautiful tagline. You can find it. That release is usually the second Friday of every month. You can find our Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe offerings. And already, Jack and Jill is going to be the 12th movie that we look at. And it's sort of a Thanksgiving special. That's why this is released on Thanksgiving. But the other films that we've looked at so far is Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, Little Nicky, Pixels, Hubie Halloween, and that's our first season. And that first season, Siege, how would you describe it? What do you think that first season of episodes was or is?
I mean, the first season is us exploring the known universe, and everything after that is us going beyond, right? It's going out there. Like, yeah, so that first season is us laying the law down, right?
Yeah. And then once we laid the law down, we started our second season, and we tried to give our seasons a theme, right? Because it helps if you have a theme to watch these movies. And we also decided right from the beginning, we're not going to be boring and do things chronologically. We're going to this like a Quentin Tarantino podcast, right? I might already be dead. Who knows? I don't like that joke. I'd like to strike it from the record. So our season two, it was Adam and we started with Adam and Jennifer Aniston looking at Just Go With It and Murder Mystery. Followed that up with the Drew Barrymore trilogy, Adam and Drew, looking at The Wedding Singer, 50 First Dates, and Blended. And now, for what, in all intents and purposes, are our holiday specials, we're looking at Adam and Adam. That's Adam Sandler and Adam Sandler in Jack and Jill. And then we'll announce it here so that you can prepare. 4 days after the last night of Hanukkah 2021, we will be releasing our 8 Crazy Nights episode, which is Adam and Adam and Adam, as he plays Davey, Whitey, and Whitey's sister, Eleanor. I forgot her name. I'm glad that it came to me in the last moment. But yeah, so that's what the show is, and that's what we're doing here today. But another part of the Say Report proper is that we have these quizzes, and Will, he's been a busy guy this year, so we always want to have him here, but you know, sometimes the stars don't align, but they aligned right now, and Will has prepared a Adam Sandler quiz for us to take, and it's a proper quiz, right, Will? So like, grab a pen and paper if you're playing along at home.
It's a classic style, the usual 9-question format, as all good quizzes have 9 questions.
Plus Adam Sandler born on September 9th,
9-9. Yeah, exactly why I did it. And he was in Brooklyn 9-9. It just worked.
That's just because his son was in it, though.
That's my boy, Siege. Oh, we're doing it. So, I mean, is there
another
anything
film I tried?
That's my boy jokes? Yeah, we're doing them now. Yeah,
yeah,
that's happening.
We've been doing them forever. That's welcome to the That's My Boy jokes. But, Will, I'm ready to cede the floor to you right now to get to this Adam Sandler quiz. And I thought about it driving home today. This is a dangerous one, right? Usually you give us quizzes and it's stuff that, like, we're not claiming to be the authority on. We have some claim to authority.
Apart from the Brendan Fraser one, they've usually been a random selection of things. And with Brendan, as we know, you guys know your stuff.
I'm covered, and I suck at those ones too, so I'm good.
Yeah.
To be fair, you have started an early precedent of not being good, and that's been great. And it's worked well for you because you haven't had to worry about stepping up your game anywhere.
Never set expectations. There's your lesson.
Yeah, that's sort of the philosophy of the Say Report, if we really wanted to boil it down, is that if you expect something, you can only expect to be disappointed. Or something prolific and profound, but that's not really what the show's about. But you're right, Siegen. You've really cultivated this whole figurehead of, I'm just not a good test taker. I know what I'm talking about, but on the day when I have to write down the answers, my mind just goes blank.
Oh, for 34 years of my life, my brother.
Plus, Will.
Yeah, it's the standard thing of, you know, you can do all the revision you want. You get into the exam, you read the first question, and you go, this looks wrong. And it was the one thing you didn't think to read at any point in your revision.
Sure, the one thing.
Yeah, the one. Yeah. I mean, kudos to you for apparently revising. The one thing I do like about the Will quizzes, and the reason why we appointed him Quizmaster General, aside from the fact that he is just phenomenal at it. Honestly, if you need a guy to write quizzes for you, you should contact Will. He knows what he's doing. Is the fact that I
Anything
don't.
to boost the IMDb page that I now have.
Is the fact that for Will's quizzes, I feel it is impossible to study or revise. You have to go in just like you're jumping into a deep pit and hope, just hope that along the way you have gleaned something that will help you out.
I mean, they have a solid 50% pass mark, so I think so far, I mean, at least you, Devin, have been fine.
Hey,
He's been
man.
dragging the average down
I
somewhat.
try. I
There's
just
been some very
fail.
high
That's it.
points.
Ew, come on now.
Well, the fact of the
There's been some
matter is we're
great
still
high notes.
accredited, right? These quizzes are still accredited
Absolutely.
because of that 50% pass mark.
There you go.
So.
Oh, yeah. They build to a bigger grade that someone's keeping track of somewhere, hopefully.
We
There'll be a spreadsheet somewhere for these quizzes, I hope.
appreciate it.
So whoever's out there who's listened to all the save reports and has done listened to all the trivia days we've done, who is keeping the spreadsheet, thank you. Keep up the good work. We appreciate you. I really hope you exist.
All right, I've got my
Alrighty.
notebook ready.
Yeah, let's do it.
Good. All right. Well, let's roll straight in with so I took a bit of a different track of this one. Usually I will scroll through some IMDb trivia for different things we're talking about, find some fun facts about people, and form them into kind of quiz questions for you guys. Today, I've gone with a different track and I went, I wonder what the internet has to offer. So I've gone through a series of Adam Sandler quizzes from different websites and borrowed questions. Now, some were way too easy and I had to ignore them straight away. One I've just rewritten because you kind of answered it in your preamble about this thing. So I took that out. So, it's a fluid quiz today. We'll see what happens.
I like this. I'm in. I've taken many an Adam Sandler quiz in my life.
Oh, you should be recognizing questions left, right, and center, then you'll be fine.
Is this the one that Sujin passes and I fail? Could precedent be set tonight on the Say Report? Listen and
Wait,
find out.
is that a real promise or a Say Report promise?
Oh,
I
ouch.
think we know.
Yeah, I think we're all aware of where
I
we
don't think
are.
I used the word promise for a very sincere reason.
True, that's fair. I mean, never promise to promise. Everything will be fine.
Ba-boom. That's
All right,
expectations again.
question number one. In the beginning of the movie Big Daddy, what was Sonny Koufax's girlfriend's name?
Oh, it's a movie that we haven't yet covered here.
Yeah,
Yes. One of
see?
those ones where I go, hey, Devin, when are you going to talk about this movie? And you go, eh, one day.
Yeah, so.
You asked me not to do a Jack and Jill question, so I've had to ignore those ones because we didn't want to have some kind of paradox invented. The Sandler paradox, if you will.
Okay.
I mean, I can give. Would you like a clue because you haven't spoken about the movie?
No. I'm fine with how this is working right now.
Okay, good. That's lucky.
I waited for Devin to
I was going
answer,
to try
but
and invent a
fine.
clue.
I've written down an answer. Regis, it is my final answer. I know you're busy drinking the pink, but we can move to two whenever you're ready, Will.
Question two. The tagline, "The Love Boat was never quite like this," belongs to which Adam Sandler movie? That is, the Love Boat was never quite like this.
I think I got it. I hope I got it.
It feeds into Jack and Jill, actually, weirdly.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the right movie. Yeah, all right, cool.
Hope we're
Hey, I guess
not
we'll
talking
find out
about the
later.
right movie. I hope that there's another Love Boat movie. Ooh. Oh, damn, it could be two. I fucked myself.
No, there's this is it's a thing. Is a you got it right, Dev. I trusted you. I feel this across time and space.
I've written both answers down.
See, I knew you had
Very
it.
safe way to quiz.
I will
Good way to quiz.
decide in the moment when it is time to read.
As I hear the answer, I will know which one to say. Question three. In Happy Gilmore, which open does Happy win?
Ooh. Am I allowed to look at my notes from previous episodes? That just feels like cheating. You
It
never told
doesn't
me to
feel like an
create.
open book exam.
Ooh, it's a good one. Do 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 do.
We good with, are we happy there? We're moving on to question four. What are we
I'm in my
thinking?
happy place, but I don't know if I'm happy with my answer.
I
Not
am
problematic.
ready to move on.
Okay. In question four, in Billy Madison, what food or dessert does Billy love the most? To the point that his maid says, "I thought I was your insert name of food here."
Yeah. Okay, feeling good, feeling confident about that one. Only took it's the halfway point. It's the
Do I
hump.
need the
No, not
brand
yet.
name? I guess that's the joke,
That's the
right?
question, Siege.
Yeah, that's kind of the question.
Again, this is taken purely from a website, so let's go with whoever wrote the quiz on the website. That's the mindset you need to be in.
Okay,
Internet
okay, okay.
trivia, four answers, pick your favorite one. See how you go. Question five.
Wait, I have to ask a
There
question
are.
before we go to question five. I'm sorry. Did these
Okay.
have
No, please.
multiple choices before?
Some did, some didn't.
Okay, cool. I mean, I don't want them. I was just
No.
curious.
I will never give you multiple choice answers. That's not how these work. Well, actually, to be fair, I say that. Question nine has a multiple choice. Anyway.
That's a say report
It's a
promise
promise.
for you. Welcome
I
to the
promise
club.
you I'll never do the thing that I'm going to do later.
I was hoping question five had them
Question.
after that, but continue.
No, question nine. You've got some time to wait.
All right, good.
Question five. There are 10 Adam Sandler films with his character name in the title. Name five of them.
Oh man. Okay. Wait a second. Jeez.
Well,
Okay.
I
Give me a
think
second.
I named five of them at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, but I wasn't listening to you. Give me a second.
You can name all 10 if you feel confident, Devin. That's
Oh,
fine.
wow. What a dick this guy is.
That.
And really, it's nine, but 10 as a hint.
Really, 9 but 10. All right, all right, all right.
Did he just say really nine, but 10? Is
Well, I
that.
mean, because
Yeah.
of. Because. Never mind. I don't want to give away the. That's a fantastic. Okay,
Yeah, that
what?
one. That film you're
Yeah,
thinking of
that one.
right
Yeah,
there, that one makes it
exactly.
nine but ten.
Oh man, I love it. I'm so happy. I love this show. I love you guys. Everything is working the way it should. I'm at 6 of 10. I mean, we can vamp or we can move on.
Don't you
But
remember
you can come
Mr.
back. You can
Burns?
think about it and come back to it as you go.
Yeah.
Well, question six. Let's keep moving and see what happens.
Yeah.
It might give you, it might give away an answer. In Happy Gilmore, who is shown in heaven with Chubbs? There are two people in heaven with Chubbs. Who are they?
Yeah, buddy. I hope that's correct.
I mean, I say people, beings.
Da
Yeah, I
da
got the 6 out of the 10 too, Dev. I'm wondering where. Oh, never mind. I remember. I
You
remember there
remember?
were other types of movies. Let me put it that way.
Oh, you son
Other
of a
things
bitch.
exist.
How dare you? How dare you consider other Adam Sandler films? Oh, right, there's one.
Question. Yep. There you go.
There we go.
Well, it's fun to have you going back and forth on questions, but I'm going to plow straight into question seven.
Do it.
In The Wedding Singer, What will Julia's married name be if she marries Glenn?
Too easy, but you know what? I needed a gimme, so I appreciate it, my
Oh,
brother.
so was that just for
I
Devin?
just.
I missed that. Wait a minute.
Oh, you can ask the question
What
again.
would
He didn't hear you.
No, I
Okay,
heard you, but I
in
thought I
the.
heard you prefix it with that was a question for Devin.
No. He
No,
said
that's a
number
question for everybody.
seven.
Oh,
He said those
yes.
rhyme.
Yeah, I just appreciate the name, so it needed to be said out loud. Question number eight. A man with a serious drinking problem is the tagline for which Adam Sandler movie?
That's a terrible tagline.
Yeah, but the
If it's.
silence was nice. You guys really felt like you were thinking or
If it's.
writing.
I was writing it down and like, I mean that's what it's gotta be, but I don't want it to be that.
Yeah, I know. He was actually leaving Las
I
Vegas
have
with Nick
no
Cage.
idea
He has
who
a
this
small
would
bit
be.
part.
You have no idea.
I'm
I mean,
thinking
I
about
might be
this.
wrong, but it. Think about me saying that's a terrible tagline for what the film is.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that I think it might be only because the joke works and I hate it, so I'm gonna go with that.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I would do that.
that's fine. That's the thing.
And at this point, we arrive at our final question, question nine, the multiple choice promise. Which of these movies has the lowest score on Rotten Tomatoes? Little Nicky, Mr. Z, Mr. Deeds, Don't Mess with the Zohan, or I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Gonna said Jack and Jill. I know that one. Believe it or not,
Yeah.
lowest score on IMDb of everything.
I
Thought
also
one of his
haven't.
other movies had the lowest score ever.
It might be something
Did
else
Jack
that
and
that.
Jill overtaken it?
I mean, Jack and Jill had a 3.3, because I was looking for spoilers for what might be the next theme, the villains, the films that people just hate, which easily Jack and Jill could fit into.
Yeah.
And I was looking and I'm like, so what's the baseline for Jack and Jill? And it's a 3.3. And then going through, I couldn't find another one that was lower
I
than
can give you
3.3.
one. I can give you a lower Adam Sandler movie, which we'll talk about shortly.
Ooh.
I'm gonna name that. So I also have an addendum to the name one, like a question, but we'll talk about it when we get to it because I named more than enough.
Yeah, I have nine. I'm sad that I can't get to 10. I'm hoping that the one that I'm forgetting is whatever. But what I do need to ask then, Will, is can you give the multiple choices one more time for number nine?
Of course. I mean, it's because you need answers to question five as well.
No,
Yeah.
I had all those written down already.
I'm sitting right here. I'm putting my pen down because I have answered already.
All right. Well, which movie has the lowest score? Little Nicky, Mr. Deeds, Don't Mess with the Zohan, or I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
All right, I'm going with it. I don't love it that I had to write down what I just wrote down, but I have to imagine that that's where it is. And then that's it. Pencils down for Devin Decker as well. So now we get
I
to.
think
All right,
question five
wonderful.
forgot about one particular movie. So remind me when we get there to talk about it, because I think I can even name the
Okay.
movie they forgot. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, well, I mean, we should probably start at the beginning. Unless you want to start with question five, we can.
No.
We should start at the beginning. It's a very good place to start.
All right. So, question one, in the beginning of the movie Big Daddy, what is Sonny Corleone's girlfriend's name? What do you have?
Okay, Dev, go ahead, because I will tell you I didn't get this one, so I did something else instead.
I wrote Jill, hoping that he reused the name.
It is classic Adam Sandler, but it is not Jill.
Ah, damn it.
Is it Mandy? Marilyn? Brittany?
No,
Tiffany? Candace?
it's
Randy? Heather?
Vanessa.
Oh.
Vanessa Funk.
Is it any of those ones I said with a linen after it?
You know, my favorite cutscene from Ted 2 is when he tells John what he wants his name to be, because it is the same energy of that Vanessa Lynn scene from the first one, but Mark Wahlberg just rattling off so many movie characters.
God. Brandy, Heather, Channing, Brianna, Amber, Sabrina, Melody, Dakota, Sierra, Vandy, Crystal, Samantha, Autumn, Ruby, Taylor, Tara. I could do this all day. I love that bit. Shelley and Chantel? No. Fucking Becky? You know, I think one of them might be Devon or Devon. Is it Devon? It might be
He
Devon.
says Devon, yeah.
Jay Quellen? Is it Jay Quellen?
You done messed up, Aaron.
All right. I did not get number one.
I did not get number
Okay,
one
well, yeah,
either. I
Vanessa.
wrote Jill. Vanessa, though, I should have trusted in my Adam Sandler cinematic universe.
So the clue was going to be it's classic Sandler, but you didn't want it, so here we are. Question two: The Love Boat was never quite like this,
All right,
belongs to
Sijin,
which Adam Sandler
let's
movie?
say them at the same time.
So
Will, give us
is
a countdown.
okay, 3, 2, 1, Sandler.
Hotel Transylvania 3.
Overboard. Oh, I thought it was
Going
the boat one. Yeah,
Overboard
going
is
overboard.
damn
correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and the reason that that joke
Also,
works is because Going Overboard came out in what, 89, 90? So like Love Boat was also like still in everybody's brain.
Yep,
yeah, Sandler's first movie, 1989.
Yeah.
Going Overboard felt like two on the. I overthought myself out of that one.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were expecting subtlety in an Adam Sandler quiz?
I was expecting subtlety from Will. What I did was
Nope.
overestimate Will and his nefarious nature. I wrote down Going Overboard, but I did announce Hotel Transylvania 3, so I get no points. And Sijin
Also,
is on the
while we're on the
board.
subject, Going Overboard, the lowest rated film on IMDb, with
Oh.
a 1.8 out of 10.
And we're going to talk about it a little bit later because somebody in this movie eventually basically steals that movie to him so much to the point that Adam Sandler puts him in Jack and Jill.
Good
I mean,
points.
of any film where you can see the thing happen in the movie, then go and be in the movie, it just doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, 1.8. It's got 13,000 reviews and it has a 1.8 out of 10.
Well,
I
that
I'm
just
gonna say right
sounds.
now that I bet Dev got number three. I could not remember for the life of me this one.
The name of the open that he wins. What do we got?
Yeah, you would be incorrect, Sijin, because I do not have that. I
I
have
put Dr. Scholl slash preparation preparation H.
I mean, it's the Pepsi Open. Pepsi sponsors the last one, but it's not, there's like another name for it.
It's the Waterbury Open.
The what? Then that because they're in Waterbury, friggin' Connecticut. I was in Waterbury, Connecticut this weekend.
All right, cool. Didn't get that one either, though. I'm feeling good.
It's a good quiz.
It's a good quiz.
Question number four. In Billy Madison, what food or dessert does Billy love the most? With the maid saying, "I thought I was your," insert
Snack
English food here.
pack. Backpack. Yeah.
Snack pack.
So I put pudding cup, and
Yeah.
that's when I asked you about the brand name, but then I remembered the brand name, so it was okay.
Good. I'm proud of you.
Cool.
And
You
now
should
we
be. Right
come
now, I
to
believe
that.
I'm 1 point ahead of Devin. I'm just saying.
You are
You
one
are
point
ahead.
ahead
You
of
are
Devin.
blazing a trail into the lead
Okay,
here.
here we go. Number five, though.
All
We got
right,
to talk about number five.
five. Let's go one for one back and forth until we run out of films.
Go ahead, Dev.
Sandy Wexler.
Excellent. Little Nicky. Let's start with the easy one.
Mr. Deeds.
Don't mess with the Zohan.
Chuck, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Billy Madison.
Absolutely. Yes.
Happy Gilmore.
Hubie Halloween.
Jack and Jill, which
And
I didn't
Jill.
know if that counted as the two names, but.
That is the two names.
Okay, and I got one for you that's not on this list. The Meyerowitz stories. He definitely plays a Meyerowitz in that
He
movie.
does play a Meyerowitz in that. I couldn't think of what the name was. I'm like the blank stories, hoping it would come to me.
9, 10, 11, 12. I'm just saying, I named 12. I'm just saying.
You didn't name 12,
Well.
you named 11.
I'm sorry, Jack and Jill. I'm pretty sure that counted as two
What, so what's
characters
the
in one
extra
movie.
one? Billy, Happy, Nicky, Mr. Deeds, Hubie, Jack and Jill, Zohan, Sandy Wexler, Chuck. Well, he's Larry in that movie.
And the Meyerowitz stories.
So Meyerowitz is 11.
Okay, fine. But you named 10. My point was I named one more than you.
You did
That
name
was
one more than me.
the point.
Well, we have a quizmaster general to determine how points are assigned for this one.
Well, I mean, feeling as I said name 5 and you both named 10, I'm giving full marks all around.
Of course.
That's, you guys have done very well there. I've given you bonus points everywhere. And I'm going to give Sijin a half extra bonus point
Woohoo!
for remembering the name of a film Devin can remember.
So, what, 3 points for me, 3.5 to Sijin, just for point of reference?
No, I gave you 5 each,
Oh, okay.
and then an extra 0.5. Yeah, because I can.
That's fair. That's what you do. So, just for the
Yeah.
record, I have 6 points. Sijin has 7.5 points.
Yes, you are correct with the scoring so far. Question 6 has 2 more points available. You could put into the lead here.
Ooh, yeah, you
In
definitely could.
Happy Gilmore, who is shown in heaven with Chubbs?
So let me go first because I only got one and it may not be right. I'm pretty sure the gator is with Chubbs up there, right?
He is,
I
have the
or she is.
alligator.
I don't know.
Okay, so that's one.
Two.
That's one. But what's the other one, Dev?
Abraham Lincoln.
Correct.
Oh, who is at the end of Happy Gilmore? Oh, that's such a bummer.
He is waving behind the piano. Question 7, which you said was a gimme and we all needed one. In The Wedding Singer, what would Julie's married name be if she marries Glenn?
Julia Guglia,
That's
right?
correct.
Guglia?
Yeah, Guglia,
Guglia.
because there's a G in there
There's
that
a
you
weird G
just
in there that I think
ignore.
might be silent.
Yeah.
Silent G.
All
Yes,
right.
Julia. I just enjoyed the name.
I mean,
Question 8,
it's
the
legit.
tagline we all hate.
Is it
A
Punch
man
Drunk
with a serious
Love?
drinking problem. It's not Punch Drunk Love.
Is it
Okay.
The
Could be
Water
Devin
Boy?
taking the lead. It is The Water
It's a
Boy.
terrible tagline.
I actually think that's a better tagline for that movie than what I thought it was. Like,
I mean, it's better. I mean, Punch Drunk Love, yeah, that doesn't make any sense as a tagline for it, but his anger doesn't come because he has a drinking problem. He just loves water.
Yeah, nice.
He doesn't say it's angry. He's serious about
So
drinking
I have to ask this
high
before we go
quality
into the final
H2O.
question. Before we go into the final question, did Devin just pull a half a point ahead of me?
He is, yeah, it's 9.5 to 10 currently. So it all comes down to question 9.
Abraham Lincoln. Sorry, go ahead, man.
I mean, that's,
You've
All right,
ruined
question
my
9. Which movie has the
chances.
lowest score on Rotten Tomatoes? Little Nicky, Mr. Deeds, Don't Mess with the Zohan, and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
I
Devin,
had to
go.
go. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Dev.
I went with Little Nicky.
I went with Zohan.
Is I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Us! Fuck!
All right, I'm okay losing it. I went with Little Nicky because I have been talking about Jack and Jill with the family this week, right? My father's revisionist history that he never wanted to see it. He was looking forward to Arthur Christmas, and I dragged him to the Muppets, to which I said, "Well, that makes no sense, Dad. You never want to see an animated movie ever." But firmly stands by he did not want to see Jack and Jill. And the conversation of that movie is awful, and then my mother, but not as bad as Little Nicky. So I live in a
Full
household that
of
chastises
liars.
and destroys Little Nicky every step of the way. So it makes
I see your
sense.
logic. I mean, it's undeniable,
Do you have what the ratings
according.
are?
No, it came purely from a four-click option. And I, to be fair, guessed Zohan as well, and I was wrong. Chuck and Larry has a 14% approval rating.
Oh man.
That's
Ooh.
and Chuck and Larry coming soon to an episode of the ASCU near you. I won by half a point. I feel okay now. I'm
You
gonna
did. It was 9.5 to 10. Big now, big day for everyone.
I'm gonna credit my victory to my Dunkachino.
Dunkachino, served by Al Pacino.
Can't wait to talk more about it when the episode proper starts. Which will, I mean, we're going to be saying goodbye to you for a while, but it would be undeniable that this wouldn't have happened had you not chastised the two of us. We talk a lot about people saying, coming to us and saying, why aren't you guys doing the Adam Sandler cinematic universe that everybody so desperately desires in the wake of Hubie Halloween? And you were one of the loudest voices to say that, at least in my ear, and I'm sure Sejan's, because you're
I mean, to be fair, Will is just the voice that I use for my conscience on a regular basis. So I can't tell if it's really him saying it or if it's just in my own head. But yeah.
I mean, as Jiminy Cricket in this kind of scenario, yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm glad I could be a catalyst to the building of the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe.
And we appreciate
Wait, that sounds like I'm taking credit for his work. No, I mean for your work, not his work.
it,
He did the bulk of the effort in that side of things. I'll give him that. That's
but.
fine.
So, I mean, have we done you proud so far with what we've put on display? Any notes,
I
I
mean,
guess?
absolutely. No, I enjoy the building of all the rules and the lore that kind of comes with the Adam Sandler thing is what I enjoy about it, where you're finding those common threads that he likes to play with in every film. That's the fun bit of it. And I like that kind of being able to sit back and go, oh yeah, he did do that name, that name, that name, or that kind of trope again and again and again. And but not in a way where it's like, oh, it's annoying. Adam Sandler did the same thing again. He uses it in a very clever way.
Well, let me
And
give
that's
you a
what makes
little
it
bit of
fun.
yeah, give me let me give you a little bit of preview of my notes. He does a lot of his normal shtick in this movie, and I have some thoughts about the fact that this may be a pretty definitive Universal film, but we'll talk more about that on the episode proper. But since you're here, and I want to give you that before it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, if
Well, I look
we're.
forward to hearing how it all comes together between
Yeah.
Jack and Jill.
If we are teaser trailering here, and I'm all about a Sejan's Gambit, it's the reason why we have it as part of the Say vocabulary. I feel like if this film had been better received, the conversation that surrounded Hubie Halloween would have happened 8 years earlier.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to dive into it, and I hope we do you proud. Well, I hope we do you proud on this one.
Well, I look forward to listening on my drives around the town. Because for
You're
those who don't know, I'm starting a new job on Monday where I don't get to use my bike anymore and I have to use the car the whole time. So
yeah.
luckily
For
it
anyone
comes
who's
with an Apple
wondering,
CarPlay.
Will's the only person out there that listens to us on a Zoom, and I'm really, really proud of that.
I mean, I have to imagine that's impossible to do, but Will found a way,
Hey,
and that's
where there's
why
a
we
will,
love
there's a
him.
way.
He did
I
the
had to.
joke.
Oh, man.
It was too easy, but I had to.
Yeah,
I guess that's where it ends. Thanks, guys.
that's pretty solid. Well, no, Will, you're here. Is there anything that you want to plug or say to the people before we say goodbye?
If anyone is listening in Australia, please buy Young Henry's beer. That's now what I sell. It really helped me meet my target if you will go out and buy some beer, specifically from Young Henry's Brewery. Yeah, that's all I got. Thanks, guys. Enjoy. I'm glad you guys have taken this idea and run with it and made it into a show.
Well, we're glad that you were able to stop by and give us really just a crackerjack quiz. And I look forward to the next one. Hopefully, we can see you at the end of season three with yet another Adam Sandler quiz. I'm looking forward to it prematurely. So that's ends the Say Report portion of the episode. If you would like to talk to us about anything that we said, I can be found on Twitter at Devin D. Decker.
And you can find me at Siege versus the World. Sorry, I told somebody that Will was on with us, and now I have a whole slew of people from my undergrad and graduate school just being like, "Tell Will I say hi." So there you go, bud.
Cool. Hi to those people. We did.
We had one hell of a pub crawl with them, Will.
We
had
I believe the
to.
last one I got was just say, "Tell him I'm single now." La 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 la. Okay, so there you go, bud.
I mean, I wish I could say I was too, but it's nice to know I'm being thought of.
But if you ever need a green card, right?
Where's that
I
Adam
mean,
Sandler
I've just
movie?
got one. Just got one here for Australia, so I should start collecting them. Is that how it works?
Yep.
I mean, you
Here
gotta
you
catch
go.
them all, right? If you don't have global citizenship, what are you even doing with your life?
Oh, man. I love you,
All
bud.
right. I mean, it's a hell of a name. I will also say I have slowly begun curating the Say Report Instagram. It is at the Say Report on Instagram. It currently has zero followers and posts, but we're getting there.
All right, man.
Yeah, we're on Instagram
Stay with
now.
it,
That's
guys. So
well.
yeah, follow that, and it'd be nice to see how many people follow, and then I promise to start posting things so people start following.
Yeah, especially all those undergrads saying hi to Will, right? That seems like it's ripe for follower picking. I don't know how the internet works. I do at minimum two podcasts. I still don't know how the internet works. And usually we throw to Will, but right now, let Sijin and I get our ties on and then throw from Will over to the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe and their exploration of Jack and Jill. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the Sandlerverse.
Thank you for listening to the Say Report with your host Devin Decker and Sijin Serwick. Please follow the guys on Twitter and Facebook by searching for the Say Report, and you can always subscribe on your podcast channel so this is delivered straight to you and you can enjoy it every week. With apologies to your mother, we'll see you next time.
I can't believe this. This is insane, man. You gotta call him.
Oh, cool, you buns. You know I'm still hurting from the whole fun bucket fiasco.
No, but Pacino liked you. I swear to God, he really liked
Oh,
you.
will you stop it already? You know all he wants to do is play Twister with your sister.
Jill, would you just do this for me?
You know, maybe I'll be ready to date again in a few weeks. We'll sit and talk about it on New Year's.
New Year's?
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe podcast. I'm your host, Devin Decker, and joining me, my co-curator on this journey into the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe, big round of applause for Sijin Serowik.
Hello, Devin.
Sijin, how are you doing, my friend?
I have to say that after watching this movie and really sitting down and really kind of taking it in, there's really only one thing you can say, and that's, I know it was you. Everyone wants my Dunkachino. They just can't get enough of my Dunkachino. Kids from 7 to 17, they just want my Dunkachino, Devin. They just want my Dunkachino.
You kind of sound like the Trix Rabbit in reverse. You sound like Lucky Charms. You sound like Lucky Charms.
Oh my
God,
God.
I never realized. Do you think they're both played by Adam Sandler, but one of them is a
They're
rabbit and one of them is a leprechaun?
both played by Lucky the Leprechaun. That's the thing, right? Is
Very
he's
true.
luring kids into his tricks by saying tricks for kids, and then he eats them. That's what's actually in your Lucky Charms kids. Other kids.
We are still obviously shaking off some of the residual Say Report energy from the first hour of the podcast, this crossover event with the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe. But we're here today. It's a holiday episode, right? It's a holiday special, and that's why we're here on Thanksgiving watching what I did not know at the time was a Thanksgiving movie.
No, I thought that was why you picked it for this, because you picked it, and I'm blaming you every step of this way. I swear to God.
Sorry, Sijin, I can't hear your anger over my delicious Dunkachino.
You want creamy goodness? I'm your friend. Say hello to my chocolate blend.
I have to tell you, I don't think there's any coffee at all in this. I think I'm just
There's
drinking hot
no,
chocolate.
it's just hot chocolate. With just a shot of espresso, and it's not even a good shot of espresso because it's Dunkin' Donuts. I love you, Dunkin'. You're not even Dunkin' Donuts anymore, at least not out here.
It's just Dunkin', and then there are like Dunkin' Expresses when it's only a drive-through. It's weird. They got rid of the donut thing because donuts are unhealthy, which I can't wait till Starbucks drops the whole star part of it, because do you know how unhealthy stars are? But again, we digress. Yes, I did not know this was a Thanksgiving movie. The only reason that I wanted to cover this film as part of our Thanksgiving special was it was one of the choices 10 years ago for a movie that the family could go out to and see.
On Thanksgiving,
On Thanksgiving. It was
in
Thanksgiving. We were
the
in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. We had driven down we took a drive down to Tennessee, and we had Thanksgiving at a barbecue joint that for Thanksgiving had no turkey, but it was an all-you-can-eat buffet. And then we did an alpine slide. Have you ever done an alpine slide?
No, no.
An alpine slide, for anybody who doesn't know, it's like the luge or like bobsledding. They put a gravel track on the side of a mountain, and you ride down it on a little cart that literally has a handle in the center, and you push it forward to go faster, and you pull it back to brake.
For the record, as somebody that lives near Park City and Olympic Park here in Salt Lake, where they literally let you go down the Winter Olympics luge track, I understand that regular old Winter Olympics luge is a dangerous game. Essentially what you're describing is death with a friend, because like not only is it the luge where people can get seriously hurt, but they also have taken away the big puffy snow piles on either side. So yeah, just driving to a gravel track, why don't you?
Oh, there's no, it's hard. It's like concrete, and you go alone. You don't, it's just you, and they're
like shins. You ever want to see them without skin on them?
Make sure you slow down as you go into the corners. And you don't. You're not trained. You take a funicular up the mountain, and then you ride down this screaming metal death trap. And it was the best Thanksgiving ever. In fact, the next day, that night, we went to go home, and there was a Magi quest. I don't know if you're familiar with Magi quest.
This is a whole other level. What are we doing? This is definitely a Say Report spin on.
Yeah, well,
the
I'm
ASU.
Sorry, but it's all related to that. So Magi Quest, and Dale wanted to do that, and my father's like, we would just be sitting there. Let's go see a movie, and the choices were Arthur Christmas, The Muppets, which ultimately won out, and then Jack and Jill, unfortunately started like right away. Like it was like 5 minutes. So by the time we would have had tickets and gotten into it, there was no way we would have caught the start of the movie. And we'll get to why that's important a little bit later on in the episode. So for me, this has always been a Thanksgiving movie. And not even realizing that it came out 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, where like Muppet Movie and Arthur Christmas officially released on Thanksgiving in 2011. This was the carryover.
And like, the ways that we talk about the ASCU, like we assume that anybody has watched the movie. And if you have not, I'm going to say right here and right now, and this may surprise Devin, but go watch this movie before we talk about it. I may not say that with the same gusto or the same reasons in which Devin says that, but I do believe it. This is a movie that needs to be seen. With that in mind, spoiler alert going forward, also, there's a Thanksgiving scene in this movie. Like it's not just a Thanksgiving movie because it came out around Thanksgiving. Much like many a Christmas movie doesn't make it a Christmas. Like, Les Mis wasn't a Christmas movie just because it came out on Christmas. Like, like, this is a Thanksgiving movie and will be for the end of time. Because in addition to the fact that you could have seen it on Thanksgiving, like, it's about the holidays. And, like, the holidays kind of are the thing that, like, forced, like, the plot along because it's the only thing that brings them together.
He is not wrong, ladies and gentlemen. It is, but I never knew that because this is, you know, not really a confession. I think I've said it a bunch of times. This was my very first experience with Jack and Jill. And I don't know how or why I got this far in life. I made it 10 years, guys. If we were playing Whamageddon, but Jack and Jill edition, I made it 10 years.
Nice.
I feel pretty good about that.
This is a movie that I constantly felt that I had seen a lot of because of YouTube and memes. And upon watching it, realized, yup, I basically seen this movie. Like, not because I sat down and watched it, but because of just various just like nonsense of people being like, can you believe this? Can you believe this? Can you believe this? And like just always constantly in my face. Basically, we've all seen Shrek now, right? Not to get on the Shrek train again, but hey, here's Shrek again. But we've all seen Shrek, whether you've watched it or not, because the internet has memed the shit out of it to the point where you get the point. And like, that's kind of this movie. The internet has, and I don't mean just like Reddit memeing it. I mean like every movie podcast out there has talked about it. It's the reason we didn't pick it early on, is like Jack and Jill's the easy one that you go to. Like everybody out there that jokes about crap movies, this is the one that you point to. Like, everyone out there is aware of this movie, and I think maybe 20% of the population has actually watched it.
Right. So Seijin has just shared, I believe, his first impressions of this film, at least this viewing of it. And we just spent, again, like 50 minutes talking about what the show is about, why we're here. But just a quick reminder, we're here to chart our own, you know, Atlas star charts of the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe. That's the point. That's the modus operandi of the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe podcast. And again, it's ours. It's subjective based upon what we feel. Without further ado, my first impressions, I fucking loved this movie. I loved this movie to the point that because of all the memery that Seijin is talking about, I wondered if there might be something wrong with me. Now, me saying that I love this movie does not mean that that doesn't have a whole slew of problems, which if we don't touch on during this recording, on some level, I'd give us an F for failure, because there's a lot that needs to be touched on and talked about when talking about Jack and Jill.
To clarify, I don't hate this movie. I think, first and foremost, I have seen worse movies than this in my life. I could even maybe say that we've seen worse movies on this particular show. And I'm speaking about the ASCU. I guess I should clarify on this particular episode. Like Just Go With It was like there were parts of that movie that made me kind of like angry, and that never happened in this movie. I wasn't ever like I wasn't ever verbally abusive to my monitor. I wasn't ever like physically or visibly upset in any way as I watched this film. I was on one of two levels. I was either on the level of like shaking my head as I can't believe they did that, or actively disappointed in whoever was in the scene at that time.
Yeah, it's if I had to rank the films that we've watched, the low man on the totem pole, or the high man on the totem pole, because everybody knows that the lower is the more distinguished you are, right? That's one of those things that trivia talks about all the time. The lowest one that we've watched from you is definitely Just Go With It. And it's really interesting that that's the film that comes out immediately following Jack and Jill. Because I don't... Like, wouldn't you think that after a movie that... I mean, it's... You're going to get to it when we get to Facts and Figures, and I really kind of feel like I've pulled you up to the station and you can get off the bus at any time with those. But after a movie like this that feels like it's universally hated, it's weird that your next movie would be Just Go With It.
Yeah. Well, so the thing is like Just Go With It. Just Go With It carries a certain amount of everybody freaking out and not being able to admit their true feeling. Like when you look at the formula for Just Go With It, it is Adam Sandler, and that's an easy thing for people to hate on sometimes, but not all the time. Whereas then you have Jennifer Aniston, which everybody feels like maybe we can't hate on this, which is also in a romantic movie that is much more in the vein of something like a Spanglish than a Jack and Jill. So there's also that element to it too, right? Also, there is something to the idea that we are used to artists in Hollywood in general doing the bounce, right? I do a Jack and Jill so I can make it Just Go With It. Or like if you're a, you know, if you're a Nolan, like, I, you know, I get to make a shitty like fucking Tenet so that they then let me make my Oppenheimer and everybody in the world wants to be in it. Like there's this idea that like, you know, you give a little, get a little in Hollywood, and nobody is above that game. But here's the thing. We have discussed many times on this show, and again, ASCU specifically, I feel like I got to keep reminding myself we're doing a nice little presentation here, but we have discussed many times on the ASCU that Sandler is very much above those games, right? He is in a position where if he gets $100 million together and a bunch of friends, they make a movie. They don't know what that movie's going to be all the time, but they make it. And so it can't be that. Jack and Jill is not bad, right? So it's very easy to look at this movie and say like, oh, this was the this was the bounce. Somebody asked him to make this movie so that something else could happen. But no, that he doesn't get to hide behind that with his movie.
No, this is that's not a bad point. Also, I'd feel remiss to not also admit that in addition to Jennifer Aniston, Just Go With It also has Nicole Kidman. A real pedigree to what is on display in Just Go With It. And honestly, that's not one of the reasons why I don't like that film. It is just how mean it is. And for me saying how mean it is, and then we're about to talk about Jack and Jill, where in the first 15 minutes, a, let's say, 8-year-old knocks out a 42-year-old woman. It's all about the presentation, and you understand that Jack and Jill is a slapstick sort of cartoon universe.
Yeah, there's so many caveats to talking about everything in this movie. Unlike Just Go With It, there were no caveats. It is what it is. It's right on the tin. Whatever it shows you is what's going on in that movie. There are layers to this movie that have to be parsed that, like... Oh my God. Jesus. So this movie is one of those movies where it's not a good movie, and it's not a good movie on so many levels that you kind of have to start talking about it on one level, then dip down to another, then dip down to another, then dip down to another. And like, at some point you find that you haven't come up for air in a while, and you sound like that kind of asshole on the internet that all it does is rip shit to shreds. And I want to make sure that we don't come across as that in this episode. Because if there was a movie to come across that with, it's not Jack and Jill. There's plenty of other Adam Sandler movies that we've done and will do that, like, we can be like the armchair filmmakers about. I don't want to fix this movie. This movie is this movie. It exists. I'm happy it exists. I will put that out into the universe. I'm happy that exists, and I'm happy it exists the way that it is. I have no interest in talking about how this movie could be made better or worse. There's maybe only one element to it that I question, but in my questioning of it, I recognize that it could only be made in this way, and we'll get into all of that.
I look forward to it. But I guess what I really want to know, how did this movie perform, right? You say that it's not The Bounce, right? And it would makes sense that it's not The Bounce. I imagine, did this lose money? Was this not a commercial success? Is it a failure on all cylinders? Or
okay, so this movie cost $79 million to make. Pretty normal number, a little on the high end for what we were talking about. You do have Al Pacino in it. And, like, we're going to talk more about this later because we cannot talk about this movie and not talk about Al Pacino. But, like, he is still, to this day, got a pretty good career going, and this movie doesn't slow him down. So, like, you don't get a guy like Al Pacino in this movie for cheap. He is not a guy on the rebound. He is not an old actor that hasn't done anything in a while. Like, he is a get, and they got him for this movie because, man, not only is he in this movie, but he plays himself. And then on top of that, like plays like a very goofy ass version of himself. So, like, there is a lot going on here that this money goes towards. So $79 million, not cheap, not cheap. It still makes that money back. Like, in domestic alone, it makes $75 million. So it's considered a failure because in America, if it doesn't make enough money in America, then we're considered a failure. But internationally, it then makes another $76 million. So it doubles its budget, basically, and it makes $150 million. So, like, by all accounts, it's not a failure of a film financially. Yeah. It comes out November 11th, as you mentioned, a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving of that year, that did see the Muppets and things like that out. Well, let's take a quick look here and see. This is the time when Puss in Boots is in theaters, but it's been in theaters for a couple of months. This is the year that J. Edgar comes out. We're on our third Harold and Kumar by this point. It is also a Christmas movie, but has been out at this point for a whole week and a half. So Harold and Kumar has also already done like the we're doing Christmas, but we're going to do Christmas mid-November nonsense. I mean, like, this is the year that we see the re-release of Footloose. We see Moneyball. We see Real Steel. So, like, a lot of movies that, like, do pretty well, people still talk about, but, like, for me, not formative films. This is this may be the first like Sandler film late enough in his career that we're talking about movies that like I'm aware of, but nothing that really like defines me. There's only two movies that I would really kind of point to at this point that like I think of as like need to be on the shelf movies for Seijin. One of them is The Muppets. Cannot deny that. The other one, though, is Tower Heist. So like in terms of comedy movies, like that's where I am at this point in terms of what I want to see in my movies. And for anybody that has never seen Tower Heist, like go check this movie out. Like it's a, I would call it feel good because by the end of it, right? Like it's this feel good, like group heist comedy, like very much in the vein of like an Ocean's movie, but like not a spoof, but kind of a spoof of that sort of stuff. And like on top of that, it is all wrapped around the idea of the financial crisis and the financial collapse of 2008. Like, so also it's like taking hard swings at like fucking, you know, big wig bankers and shit like that. So like, it's right up my alley, especially at this time when I'm just like an angry kid at the world, right? Like I'm just pissed off at everybody that has money. So like Tower Heist becomes one of those movies that really kind of speaks to me. As much as like, isn't McGee the guy that directs that movie or whatever that dude's name is?
So. Yeah, I believe it's McGee.
Yeah, like it's in that vein, or you know, whoever it is, it's the guy that Olivia Munn talks about having the shrimp smelling dick at some point. But anyway, so like that's the kind of movie that Seijin wants to go see in theaters, right? So when Jack and Jill comes out, it doesn't speak to me in any way, I guess would be the best way of putting it. Like there's nothing in it for me at the time. It's a weird circumstance for that movie. But yeah, like by the end, it makes $150 million. It costs $80 million to make. So it's not an official blockbuster because it didn't officially double its money or any of that stuff, but it doesn't do poorly. It starts out at number two and it's done after like 3 or 4 weeks. Like it doesn't survive long. So it might've made more money if it had stuck around longer, but it just gets too far. It gets wrecked. It gets wrecked as far as criticism goes. So like people are going to it for a couple of weeks, but eventually it's so burned that people don't want to go to it anymore.
Yeah, and I also think we talk about a lot of like, Christmas movies that release in November and then they hope to see the bump. This is very much a Thanksgiving and Hanukkah film, to the fact that I don't think they ever officially celebrate Christmas in this film. And they actually kind of give themselves a narrative reason why, with the fact that his wife converted to Judaism for him.
Right.
It would lose that longevity in terms of, well, the Thanksgiving boom is gone, and then Hanukkah is over earlier in 2011 as well. So, like, the two holidays that it's really celebrating, because it eventually sneaks in New Year's as well, as all good holiday, like, films like this, like celebration movies kind of sneak in New Year's as well. I mean, it's only a week after Christmas. So like a Christmas movie, it makes sense. But a film like this that is celebrating Thanksgiving, the last Thursday in November, and then Hanukkah, which can vary at what time it falls. But generally over the past 10 years, it's been earlier in December. I mean, that definitely... I mean, the critical response and reception to this film certainly didn't do it any favors, but that any of those reviews can't say this is a Christmas movie, this might be fun to go with, you know, with the kids, that's a big part, I think, of why you see fall off with this movie as well.
Well, and to lean into some of the more say reporty side of this very special episode, we've talked in the past about the idea of the Christmas bump and the idea of like the magic of Christmas when it comes to film and how you kind of can forgive a lot of really shitty filmmaking. And I don't just mean in terms of like, oh, this was shot poorly, but also like bad storytelling and bad writing and bad tropes and all that sort of stuff. You can forgive a lot of that when it's a holiday movie, right? You can say to yourself like, oh, I know it's dumb, but it's Christmas or it's Thanksgiving. And this movie doesn't do itself any favors because it doesn't tie itself to one specific holiday, right? Like if it was gonna be a Hanukkah movie, which we then see in Eight Crazy Nights, like then fine, there's a bunch of weirdness and silliness, but I'm gonna go with it. It's a holiday movie. This movie is a holidays movie. And so like in a weird way, it feels almost like it's asking you to forgive some of its worst parts because it takes place around the holidays. And homie, don't play that. Like I'm not gonna, that's not the way I'm, like my heart will go out to a Thanksgiving film, to a Halloween film, to a St. Patrick's Day film. Like, give me anything. But this movie doesn't give you that handhold, doesn't give you that place to really rest and say, like, I'm going to enjoy it because at least it's Christmas. You never get that in this movie, despite the fact that it takes place around all of that.
Right. It's also the increasingly less rare Christmas in L.A. movie. And one of the worst parts about setting your Christmas movie in Los Angeles is, first of all, Die Hard already won that fight, right? You're going up against the champion when you're trying to be the definitive Los Angeles Christmas or holiday film. That's just facts.
Christmas in L.A. only works in one movie and one movie only, and that's The Holiday, and it works because the other half of that movie takes place in England. So, like, So, other than that, like, I try and think of other Christmas in L.A. movies that worked, and, like, I'm pretty sure the only other one I can think of is the Dave Franco, Bryan Cranston one there, The Son-in-Law or whatever that's called, that's not Son-in-Law.
Why
him, right? And that also doesn't do gangbusters either a few years later. Christmas in L.A. doesn't work for a lot of people.
And I think it's the lack of snow. I think that there's just something inherent about seeing the snow on the ground that sort of tricks your mind into going into that holiday Christmas movie mode where you are more forgiving of what's happening. And so much of this film could literally be happening any day of the year in Los Angeles. None of it is really tied except for the one Thanksgiving, like, feast scene.
Any of
it could be happening. To the fact that when they eventually get on the cruise ship, big, like, spoiler later on down the line for this film, and all of the Christmas decorations are there, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. It's the holiday season.
Yeah, well, and so... I want to take this second because what you're pointing to is definitely a problem as an audience member when it comes to, like, you know, what we see on screen. The to use a dumb old bigger word than I should use on the show, the semiotics of Christmas, like the idea being like we're visually shown what is like heartwarming and fuzzy on screen and the lack thereof in this movie, right? I do want to applaud, though, that we've called out Sandler specifically in past movies for not recognizing kind of his place in the world in a lot of his films. And the idea that he is now making this kind of movie and basically, like, putting it at his level, like a guy that owns a big house that flies out his family from the East Coast to come in for Christmas. He is in this office space, and it's not necessarily snowing on Christmas, and they go on a cruise for that and all that sort of stuff. That speaks to me as like more like authentic Sandler at this point in his life and career than a lot of the other movies that we've watched him in, kind of to the detriment of the idea that you lose a little bit of the everyman aspect. But this movie, the one place where I think it succeeds as a quote unquote holiday movie, is it really does show Sandler at this level in his life, at this level in his career, at the amount of money that he has and is making, still dealing with something that everybody deals with, and that's like weird family at the holidays. So it knocks him down to the everyman level in a way that's really interesting. It just I don't want to lose sight of that particular element before we move on, because like it is something we've called him out for before, and I want to applaud it here.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that it brings him down to the level of everyman in terms of what's going on. I mean, for a lot of this movie, he's chasing down Al Pacino to try to get him to do a job and just casually interact with many celebrities of the day, which if we don't talk about that, I think we'll be doing a disservice. But it does speak to universal understanding of the problem.
Right.
Everybody has to deal with this, and showing us that even the richest of us have to deal with their weird family members. While on one level it's a personal gripe from Adam Sandler in this film, it is something that can connect to the audience at large.
With that, you want to give us a little bit of that ASCU magic and explain to us what the plot of this movie is?
I would be happy to. Adam Sandler portrays Jack Sadelstein, a man who sort of has it all. Sure, his commercial production company is already on the verge of bankruptcy when their biggest client, Dunkin' Donuts, threatens to find another agency if they can't convince Oscar-winning actor Al Pacino to star in a commercial shilling their new drink, the Dunkachino, because, you know, Al Pacino sort of sounds like Dunkachino. I guess. It's not important. Anyway, like I mentioned, none of that really matters, because Jack is going to be taking his family on a Royal Caribbean cruise to Europe at the end of the year, and the only thing that stands between him and happiness on the high seas is the annual 4-day Thanksgiving visit from his twin sister Jill, also portrayed by Adam Sandler. Jack finds everything about his twin annoying, and when he is unable to control his anger and yells at Jill during Thanksgiving dinner, it puts his vacation in jeopardy, especially when she announces she'll be extending her visit. From here, things devolve into a series of vignettes about Jack trying to help Jill complete her list of things to do in Los Angeles, like riding a horse or getting on a game show. Eventually, thinking her actions stem from loneliness, Jack tries to pawn his sister off onto the unsuspecting male population by posting a link to her dating profile in the casual encounters section of Craigslist. But when this stellar plan goes tits up, Jill is left feeling even more depressed than before. In an effort to cheer Jill up, Jack decides to take her to the Lakers game he's attending to court Al Pacino and convince him to be in the commercial. Luckily, while Al Pacino shows zero interest in being a commercial for a coffee drink chocolatey donut thing, he shows nothing but interest in being in Timit with Jill. Michael Corleone's crush on Jill leads Jack to the realization that he can twimp out his sister as leverage to force Pacino into making the Dunkachino commercial. Thankfully, Jill sees exactly what Jack is doing and refuses to act as his prostitwin. Jack, seeing no other way to make Pacino deal work without offering up Jill as sacrifice, decides to steal some of her clothes and pretends to be his own twin and join Al for a night of romance. Not realizing that Jill is actually just Jack in disguise, Pacino starts to talk ill of him behind his back right to his face, which eventually leads to a surprisingly heartfelt moment where Pacino reveals that it is the size of Jill's heart that he truly finds attractive, especially as it relates to her unending love for her thankless brother and willingness to live in his shadow, simply celebrating his many victories. Now that Jack has realized the error of his ways, will he be able to tell his sister, Ook Magadodo, before their sibling relationship is severed for good?
Fantastic. I'm going to call you out now, right now.
This was a very hard one to do. Because there's so much.
Okay, there it is. Because what I was going to say is, here's a little secret, and this is something that ASCU fans have to come to the Say Report to hear, and Say Report fans are now going to hear about what might be in store for them when they check out the ASCU. I have discovered your secret.
Oh, you've discovered my secret.
I have figured out how to tell when and when you have not gotten super invested in one of these movies.
Oh no. And after a year of it.
Yeah. After, what is this, number 11, or is this number 12? Yeah, well, after 12 episodes, an official year's worth of this show, I can point out to you that whenever you start using a bunch of inside jokes and comments from the movie, you were definitely into this movie. And there were so many moments in this where I was like, well, if you haven't seen the movie, you didn't get that. Oh, man. The other thing I'm going to call you out on is there is 45 minutes of this movie you skipped over, including a whole other character.
I don't think it's consequential in a synopsis. I don't think that's why. I think that other character, are we talking about Felipe Eugenio Derbez, yes, who is a fucking champion? My goddamn best friend from Rob, who, like, oh my god. It, like, seeing Eugenio Derbez in this film made me so happy. But mostly because the trajectory of his career lands him in that one beautiful season of the Rob Schneider television show.
That's cutting him short. I straight up wrote, I am so happy Eugenio Derbez survived this film, because this dude goes on to do How to Be a Latin Lover, right? And stars as one of the best roles in Dora the Explorer this past couple of years. He has a bunch of movies, including one that is a direct reference to early Adam Sandler in Overboard, which just like has so much of that comedy in that movie in it. It's not like it's a remake. I don't want to give the impression that it's a remake, but it dives into that same trope and comedy that was super popular in the 80s and 90s of the like the cruise ship comedy that we then see later never work, including in this movie. But I also want to point out, like, what's the really weird Horatio Sands Cuba Gooding Jr.
Boat Trip, which is another one that I thought of. You do know that the Eugenio Derbez Overboard is a remake of the
Of going overboard, right?
Of no,
not going
of
overboard.
Overboard
Of
with Goldie
overboard
Horn
with
and Kurt
Goldie Hawn
Russell.
and Kurt Russell. Right. That's another one
But
that's in that vein.
no,
But
it's
that's
not.
shit.
That's a completely different type of movie. They're not on a
What the?
cruise ship at all. She falls off a yacht and washes up on shore in a
But it's
small town.
the Captain Ron falls into this too.
Captain
It
Ron
is
definitely falls into it, and Kurt Russell,
it,
so.
right, but it is this idea of the like the tropical comedy, maybe. It's like it's kind of in that weird vein. Like it is the idea that it is an element that very few people find themselves in, and it's ripe for comedy because of it, right? And it is because he makes it is not because he makes that movie that Sandler puts him in this, but it shows off that Eugenio Derbez has the same love of past Hollywood and old Hollywood in his filmmaking that Sandler does. And I think it's part of the reason that they get along and work in this movie in such a great way is that there's so much of Eugenio Derbez in this movie that is like kind of the heart of a lot of that middle section of this movie that then you just left out of your synopsis. And I understand why, because it almost feels like it's a different movie at that point.
You need to understand the very end of this film, right? Spoilers for the film. We've already mentioned it, but this is the big one. Like, if anything we've said has compelled you to go check it out, this is the finale moment that I'm about to talk about. Well, yeah, it's the finale moment that I'm going to talk about.
There's an epilogue.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it'd be an after credit scene today, and that's the
Yeah, that's true.
craziest thing.
It'd be a mid-credit scene
Yeah,
today.
it's weird that like it happens before the credits, but there's some reasons for that too because they have credit interstitials as well that we'll definitely touch on going forward. But when he winds up being the knight that Jill is going to find her happily ever after with, which is so important, it's so important the way that they treat Jill in this movie that she is given a happily ever after. That like I'm like, oh yeah, Eugenio Derbez was in this film. We left him at the second act, but I'm glad that he was able to sneak over the border into the finale. That's a joke that he makes all movie, so I don't feel too bad with the callback to it. I mean, and honestly, it's here's the thing. Here's the thing that we've really looked at as we've explored the Adam Ands this whole season of the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe. There's always one person in these films who feels more like the main character than the other. And the main character of this film should probably be Jill, and she's not. It is Jack's story and how
Yeah.
Jill intersects with it.
I
And that
can't
whole middle
deny that.
section, and that whole middle section is Jill's movie. And that's why it feels sort of unconnected from everything that happened before and everything that happens after it. And it's why, if I'm going to do a synopsis of this film, if I'm going to talk about it, it weirdly gets left on the floor because it's such Jack's movie, and that is such a fucking misstep in terms of this film. If they had been able to pull off the dual narrative for the two characters, it really would have gone a long way towards making this feel like a more complete film and not just, as I said, a series of vignettes.
Yeah, I applaud the idea that they want to give Jill as much weight as Jack, and the holding off on that character makes sense from a pre-filmmaking perspective. The idea that you're gonna ease the audience in, you're gonna give them Adam, and everybody loves Adam, and then all of a sudden here's Adam in a dress, and all of a sudden here's 40 minutes of Adam in a dress. So So much of this movie, I can see why the decisions were made. And I think the thing that gets to me is that, like, it wouldn't be till the day that they started filming where they were like, oh no, this is not, this was a bad idea. But at that point, when you're making a movie, it's kind of hard to stop. Like, a lot of people want to know how bad movies get made. Bad movies get made because they look good on paper. like there's the majority of them, I won't say all of them, but the majority of them are those things where like part of the reason they're so bad is the potential, right? There's this idea that there is this thing there that they had that was a nugget of an idea that we all really could get behind. But then when it came time for rubber to hit the road, it just didn't work. And the problem is with movie making, especially in the last 20 years, 30 years, like once a movie's in motion, it don't stop. The time to shelf a movie is not like after it's been made, which is what makes shelved movies such a rarity and like a delectable thing for people when they're like, oh, this movie was made 10 years ago and never seen by anybody, and now they're gonna finally release it, right? Like it's the, like for any of our Say Report fans that are listening right now, we talked a little bit about this with something like a Free Guy, right? Where like it got made and like and why would you not release a Ryan Reynolds action comedy? Well, because when it was made, a lot of people looked at it and were just like, I don't know if this works. And then we watched a bunch of shitty Ryan Reynolds action comedies that just did gangbusters, and they were just like, fuck it, work or not, we're still gonna make our money back. And that was why that movie comes out, right? And it's that same idea where like you're Adam Sandler or you're anybody working around Adam Sandler, you're on set and you know when a joke's not landing, but you also know this joke's not landing, but this motherfucker can make gold out of any turd, so why would we not keep going? And that is kind of the attitude throughout this entire movie, is moment after moment you see actors and actresses in these scenes that are just like, this? Really? Okay. And then they just keep going, including Sandler in many moments where he's just like, this isn't working, but I'm just going to keep driving it home until it does.
Weirdly, I think one of the other issues that that it fuels what we're talking about right here is that Jill, and we've seen how Adam Sandler approaches characters. We see that he puts the work in when he's developing a character. And he clearly developed the Jack character more than the Jill character. The Jill character is just an old voice that he used to do in his comedy act. And she really doesn't get much more than that.
Maybe that's the trick, because for a second I wanted to disagree with you. But now that you say that, because like I feel like the thing about Jill is I think he likes Jill more than he likes Jack, but I think because he likes Jill more than he likes Jack, he put more work into Jack. So I think maybe that's where I'm going to get kind of on the same page as you here, because like he loves Jill. Jill is treated so like in a lot of ways with kid's gloves for an Adam Sandler movie. Like there are movies where there are characters. I mean, we've seen movies in which there are straight up trans characters and cross-dressing characters and all that sort of stuff treated poorly. And in this movie, like, Jill is the better character, which I feel like is something you've been saying this whole time. Like, Jill is the more enjoyable character. Jill is the character of this movie. And in that, I feel like the movie takes good care of her, whereas, like, Jack is just awful. And, like, this movie hates Jack.
Right, because Jack kind of hates himself. And I mean, like, and that's where this movie has like real weight and meaning, is that the inherent plot line of this story is that Jack hates himself and Jill is this literal biological reflection of himself who seems so happy, even though she has nothing of what he has. It like there's a reason why they reference A Wonderful Life, because no man is poor that has friends. Jack might be successful, and again, that successfulness is kind of on the, like, losing one client will put their entire business, like, down and leave 200 people without jobs. How successful really are they? Like, do you think you'd be planning a European cruise if losing a client could shutter your business? And again, it's in the way, it's in the shadow of the collapse in 2008. So like there's some truth to why that would happen. But then you see Jill, who is herself and who lives life the way that she wants to. She doesn't really care about anything else. And she's happy. And that makes him even more miserable.
So like that's the thing, right? That is the true kind of nugget of this film, is that at the end of the day, Jack is jealous of Jill because of the idea that Jill is able to be happy in her life where she has nothing, whereas he has everything and he's still not happy. Boom. That's it. That's the elevator pitch, right? Yeah. But I think the movie doesn't do enough of that. Like, thinking back now, I can definitely point to that, like, especially when the early moments of Jack and Jill as kids and growing up, and we're supposed to see the history between the two of them, and that Jill is always proud to be very much herself in those moments, despite like the fact that like Jack is trying so hard and he always looks, you know, like he got stepped on at the end of them. And the problem is that the movie wants to tell that story, but it also wants to be funny. And so because of that, like, the joke of the scene of Jill being, I mean, for all intents and purposes, more manly in those moments than Jack is consistently, it becomes this really weird thing where it's meaner to Jill and that's the comedy than it is meaner to Jack, where that's the story, and you lose the plot. Right. Like, I think very specifically of the moment where like Jack is showing off his new armpit hair and then Jill comes in the room and like has like a whole bush. Right. And oh, that's really funny. But like, it's a mean joke at the expense of this teenage girl. And that becomes more the joke than the moment you're too busy laughing at that to recognize the look on Jack's face where he's truly feels like he's constantly getting crapped on in those scenes.
Right. I mean, and even then, the way that I read that scene is that not only does she have more hair, she's proud of it too. Like, she doesn't care.
Right.
Like, it's not like, and she also doesn't seem to care. Like, she's not bragging. She just sees that he's celebrating and then walks by and like, you know, we all got it, right? Like, what are you celebrating? And then it's actually that whole opening Wonder Years, Happy Gilmore thing that happens in the beginning of this film in order to catch us up with these characters. You see something that Jill says later on in the film where she's like, your father has, you know, he doesn't have a thick skin. So just like, we'll be nice to him, right? We don't need to pile on about his flaws, right? Whatever they may be, because, you know, I'll take it and whatever. And that comes from that whole thing where Jill slowly starts to realize how inadequate he feels next to her and then begins to pull back and live within his shadow. There's a lot of like heavy stuff in this film that honestly I wasn't expecting based upon the way that it has been talked about and treated by popular culture. But then it's not the front and center focus of it. Like that moment where Pacino says to him and he's like, do you know why I love your sister? Because she has such a big heart. I mean, look at you, look at what she does for you. And you treat her like she's nothing, and all she does is hold back so that you can be elevated. And to that fact where he's like, well, I mean, he could change. And he's like, no, he's never going to change. Because if he hasn't figured out what you're doing for him up to now, he's never going to appreciate it. And, like, that's a heart punch. And on some level, you wish that Jill got to hear that.
Yeah. Well, and on some level, you start to wonder as an audience member, I really wish I was watching this movie and Adam Sandler wasn't playing both roles. like imagine if he had gotten somebody in this role to play Jill, or what the hell, if he wants to play Jill, get somebody else in to play Jack to be the brother to this sister. And imagine that, right? Like, we'd still be talking about this movie as being like, is it offensive? Is it an offensive? Is it a crap movie or not a crap movie? I feel like part of the reason this movie becomes so hard for some people is because from the outside looking in, this movie looks very masturbatory. After years of Sandler not being able to really win audiences over, he then has the nerve to put himself in front of everybody in two roles, the two lead roles on the poster, just looking at himself. Like, how dare you, sir? Like, it becomes kind of like a challenge to people. Like, Sandler is so angry at the world that he steps into this movie to play these two roles to be like, oh, you don't like me as the lead of a movie? How do you like me as two leads, motherfucker? Like, Jesus.
Right. The only way it could be more masturbatory is if the two leads were somehow the romantic leads.
Oh my god. And were leading to be with each other together. Yeah.
Like,
oh man.
Yeah, it's this movie is something. And even like taking a step back from all of the other emotional stuff about this film that people are bringing to it as, oh my god, Adam Sandler made himself both leads. This film, on the tin, is that movie where Adam Sandler played twins.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's your log line. That's really your elevator pitch, right? The next sentence is where we went further with it. But really, I have a script where Adam Sandler is going to play twins.
Yeah.
Do you want it or not, Sony? And Sony goes, sure, why not? And if he fails, we'll get him to do a bunch of animated films. Maybe something with video games. And they get that. They get their cake and they eat it too. Speaking of cake, I think it's time to go to a wedding and celebrate something new, something old, something borrowed, and something blue. For Say Report listeners, this is sort of our big moment. This is the thing that makes the ASCU podcast stand out, where we look at these films and think of something new that this film would be bringing to the Adam Sandler cinematic universe, something old that we've already seen, so it's kind of referential, something borrowed, so something that completely never existed within the universe before, and then something blue, which Seijin and I seem to have, let's say, dueling banjo opinions about what that blue means.
Oh, man.
So Seijin, the way that this usually goes, we one of us starts and then we alternate. And because you seem so hot to trot about borrowed, I'm going to let you go first on new.
Yeah. I mean... for the new here, it's Lady Sandler, right? So for me, I have a hard time sometimes differentiating between like what's new to the universe versus what's new chronologically, but I'm going to stick to the universe timeline as I always have. And this is the first time that we in the universe have really seen Sandler on screen performing a female role. And it's not the last time it happens in his movies. And we'll talk more about that in probably our very next episode. But the idea that like that of Lady Sandler, this is really the first time that we see him kind of really leaning into that concept.
Cool. I dig that.
It's also chronologically, because we're never going to really focus on this until we get into God, like deep seasons, if we survive that long. But like Lady Sandler shows up in like some of his earliest stand up work. Like there are albums out there where he plays female characters on his stuff. And that is very clearly influential here. But again, as far as talking about like ASCU, like timeline and things like that, this is the first time we have encountered that.
Yeah. In fact, some of the SNL skits with Adam Sandler that mm-hmm. rings so true in my mind are ones where he plays a female, specifically the food court mall girls,
right?
With him and David
Chris
Spade,
Farley.
Chris Farley,
yeah,
just totally nailing that Valley Girl thing that was going on in malls at the time. You're not wrong. Lady Sandler is an important thing, and this is the first time that we're watching a film as part of the ASCU where we see it.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to my new, and again, if this happens somewhere else in an Adam Sandler film, I can't wait to find it. But what is new from me is atheism. And the fact that Nick Swardson's Todd is an atheist. And the only reason that that is important is because such of a cornerstone, such an important thing about the ASCU up to this point is the fact that heaven and hell exist. They are real tangible things as displayed on screen. And this is the first time we see a character who flat out says, I don't believe in that.
Yeah. I will point out, just because this is probably going to affect conversations later in the episode, so I'm going to start laying the groundwork now. But the idea being that it is brought out in opposition to Sandler's character specifically. It's not that his character is an atheist, but someone else in the universe is an atheist, and everyone around that character is reminding them that they're an idiot for believing in that, not saying one way or the other where I fall on that particular conversation, but it is made pretty clear in this universe of this film, in this one particular film, that if you're an atheist, people out there think you're a fucking idiot.
Right.
Johnny McEnroe showing up once again to yell at somebody in an Adam Sandler movie thinks you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah. It's an important little moment, and it was something I don't think I ever expected based upon everything else that we've seen.
That's what I mean, right? Is like, is I actually think it does work really well with a lot of stuff we've seen, because as I talked about really early on, Sandler and introducing the idea of just plain old Judaism and his Jewishness to his characters and his roles, and slowly kind of building up that part of his characters, and then eventually getting to this point where he lays the law down like, no, I'm Jewish. I am Jewish. And it becomes not only joke significant because of those moments with Nick Swardson in this movie being an atheist, but also plot significant in that they celebrate Hanukkah and don't really celebrate Christmas. Like, their whole "we're gonna get on a cruise for Christmas" thing, like, lends itself to that whole idea of just like, we're Jewish, we don't need to be in LA during Christmas, we're gonna get on a boat so that we don't have to be around all of that, like, that sort of stuff. Like there is just such an unabashed acknowledgement of his religion in this particular movie that we see in other movies really blown out. Like, I mean, we'd be remiss if at this point I didn't just name drop 8 Crazy Nights, right? Like, that sort of stuff. But, like, it was not something that he really leaned into or expressed in his earlier films, which isn't too surprising if you know anything about the ways that, like, Jewishness is treated in the world writ large. But, like, the idea that he has gotten to a point in his career where he's not going to hide it and, in fact, embrace it and celebrate it, like, and I think that is the only reason we see atheism so on display in that one character in this movie, is only to elevate how much he is unabashedly Jewish in this film.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts, and it's also the right way to do it, right? Like, I don't want to say that his Todd, you know, the character played by Nick Swardson, is a villainous character in any way, shape, or form, but he actively takes on an antagonistic role against Jack in so many moments just by the fact that, like, well, I'm an atheist, and, like, and that's all he says, like, I'm not gonna understand your references or where you are. I'm an atheist. And, like, and that's such a point of contention. And it's weird that in this film that is full of conflicts, that, like, that one ranks. And it's not just a throwaway line, but is, like, referenced multiple times. So there we go with that. Old, which I have to believe we're gonna knock heads here. But
I mean, you go first, because I just knew you go first.
Really, just, you know, time plus distance and all of that, I had to go with Norm Macdonald. I had to go with the return of Norm Macdonald to a potential Adam Sandler cinematic universe film.
Yeah, man.
Because honestly, I never thought we were gonna see him again after Billy Madison, and then there he was. And to the fact that I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't the same character from Billy Madison. Still kind of shiftless, just thinking about where he's going to get laid. Because at the end of that movie, he's one of the only ones who doesn't get to settle down or get a happy ending. So if he's like, so Billy's with Veronica Vaughn, and, you know, the other friend is with the Snot Queen, and Chris Farley is making out with the Penguin in heaven. He's the guy who's still going to be on soulmate.net looking for love.
Well, I will really point out that the joke at the end of that movie is the Snot Queen is kissing both of his friends, but I get what you're saying.
Right.
No, Norm Macdonald being in this movie was a delight, a surprise. And it's one of those things that, like, I think we forget how close the two of them must have been because of the fact that everybody else that was a friend with Sandler shows up all the time, and Norm doesn't, right? Like, Norm Macdonald does not show up in every single film everywhere, but he shows up enough where you know that the two of them are still close, and he shows up in roles that show you that the two of them like working together. And part of the reason that happens is because Sandler leaves SNL, whereas, like, Norm buys in heavy into SNL. He becomes the god of SNL for, like, 2 or 3 years between his Weekend Updates and his Burt Reynolds. Like he just kind of owns all of that. Like, it's just to the point where I'm pretty sure Norm Macdonald showed up as Burt Reynolds on, like, a Jeopardy sketch unexpectedly to Will Ferrell, and Will Ferrell has to, like, improvise, like, a shit ton of lines to Norm Macdonald just, like, fucking around on set with a giant cowboy hat on and stuff like that. Like, there's just, like, Norm Macdonald is so embraced by that cast and that culture and that world that, like, he kind of doesn't have time for Sandler films at that moment, and so he doesn't show up in a bunch of the like definitive ones for us. But him showing up in this one is pretty telling how close their relationship really is.
It's very meaningful. And actually, I mean, we talk about SNL with this show a lot. Norm Macdonald sort of filled the vacuum that was left behind when Adam left to start doing these movies. And when Chris and David Spade left to do their own things. Mm-hmm. And then when Rob Schneider was out doing movies, like, there was this vacuum that Norm Macdonald found himself filling. And yeah. I mean, he's one of the luckiest men in the world that he got to be doing Weekend Update during the O.J. Simpson trial. Right.
Yeah. Like, why? Yeah, that's some of it for sure.
Why wouldn't he buy into it? Right. He gets to mm-hmm. have his he's still friendly with all those guys, but then like recognizes if I stay here, like I will be king of the roost because all of the other kings have gone out to explore the world and conquer new territories.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And he gets to kind of be the nice bridge between the Sandler, David Spade, Chris Farley era and the Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry era, like that whole thing. And what's his nuts that would play Alex Trebek there and things like that.
Oh, Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond and stuff like yeah. that. Like, you know, he gets to be, you know, there always needs to be that one guy. And granted, for the last 20 years, it's been Kenan Thompson. Love right. you. But there is always that one guy. And if you look back, you always pick out that like one or two cast members that sticks around a little bit longer than everybody else. And they're the reason you kind of keep watching each week. And then suddenly you fall in love with somebody else. And oh, that person left when you didn't realize, like that kind of thing. That is Norm Macdonald on SNL. So like, so you know kind of why he has not been leaning into the ASCU stuff or anything like that. So it's like, it's just wonderful to see him again. Yeah, for sure.
I literally cheered when he showed up because I'm like, I never thought this was going to happen again. And what you're doing right here, as much as I love the cast of characters that Adam Sandler is able to pluck from and bring to these films, I don't think anybody else could do the blind date with Jill Sadelstein the way that Norm Macdonald does.
With a straight face.
Yeah.
With a fucking straight face. Like that's what you needed. Is you needed a guy that would not crack. And if there was anything you could depend on Norm Macdonald for, holy crap.
Yeah, he commits 200% every time.
I think it's an understatement. He commits to the point where it turns a lot of people off.
Yeah, he commits a bit too hard. But I love you, Norm, right? I mean, I know we've said it a million times, but again, like, and it was just that reminder of what we lose with his passing this year. So mm-hmm. there's one final send-off, Norm, from the Say Report and the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe. Thank you for the laughs and the uncomfortable silences.
Oh, especially the uncomfortable silences, because other people have made us laugh, but nobody has made us love them when we were so uncomfortable in your silence. My old is the not so covert Covert in this episode of this movie.
Man, did Otto I pick back. Correct.
Oh man, I was so happy to see Otto back. what a weird, wonderful pull of a character. I didn't know it was coming. Like, again, somebody that like had kind of seen this movie because the world had seen this movie, and this was the first time I ever sat down and watched it. Like, nobody had ever mentioned to me that fucking Alan Covert shows up for so much of this film. I knew he was probably somewhere in here because he always is. But man, it was such a surprise. And I think the moment for me that is really a phenomenal Otto moment. Oh, man, it's actually tough for the few minutes he's on screen. It's either him yelling at the kid or him waking up in the woods. I think it's waking up in the woods. That is probably the most Otto moment for me.
The Otto moments for me is when they're trying to convince Jill that the name of It's a Wonderful Life is It's a Wonderful Life, and he punctuates it in only the way that Alan Covert can do something with Star Wars. And that's the end of the discussion. It's Star Wars. Like that thing. He says, you know, I did feel something, pride in my son. And Otto laughs, and Jack just looks at him and goes, oh, you liked that one? Like this, like this instant connection between them. And then it's when he goes to eat the bird, Poopsie, and he's like, it flew in my bread. Like, it's Otto elevated what was a shit opening to this film. There is no life in that Thanksgiving dinner scene except for what Otto injects into it. It just feels uncomfortable. Like, there are things that just, from an intelligence and logical standpoint, do not make any sense. And all of the ones related to Otto are funny. All of the ones, like, why would a soup kitchen, like, just give out homeless people for Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. Like, that whole thing when Valerie Mahaffery, which also, I love Valerie Mahaffery, so I'm so happy that she's in this film, along with Jeff, I want to say Johns, but it's like Jeff Plemons.
What's his name? From fucking UPN. He used to be Unhappily Ever After with the fucking Bobcat Goldthwait bunny. What the fuck was the name of that bunny? That was such a weird show.
I don't know, but it was not
Unhappily Ever After, right?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that was the name
of it. That was the name of the show. I said that.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't listening to you. Because right. I was too busy trying to think of, what's the Al Bundy show?
Married with Children.
So it's Married with Children with a fucking stuffed rabbit on the couch played by Bobcat Goldthwait. So anybody that's wondering what that dude did before, that's what that dude did before.
And I loved that show. That is a show that I love. Yeah. It introduced us to Nikki Cox, who then goes on to work with Norm MacDonald on The Norm Show. So, there's a lot of weird connections there. But her whole story of, so he went down to the soup kitchen, and they gave us Otto. And it's just like, don't go to that soup kitchen. That's not how you do Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. Otto.
And then the kicker of her being like, I don't even think he's homeless. He's fat. He's Al-Qaeda. Everybody gets... Oh, and then when she's making the ready-to-receive telepathic transmissions, the boop, 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 boop. And he's like, you're scaring him. She's just making noises. But Otto is fine. He becomes, all at once, he becomes this joke punctuation mark, this beautiful scapegoat, and it's like, and it just reminds you of how important the character of Otto was to something like Happy Gilmore, but most importantly, his appearance in this film sets the stage for what to expect from Jack and Jill.
Yep.
And... yeah, it's a covert covert that is so important to making Jack and Jill work.
Yeah, I couldn't let it pass without us mentioning it here.
Right, and I guess since we're still in old, it'd be wrong to not mention that Jill's character is essentially Emily Tucker from Do It From Your Mama off of What the Hell Happened to Me, telling all of her boys, why don't you play with your hockey balls?
Yeah, but that's what I mean, right? Is this is not the first time in the Sandler of it all that we've ever met this this female Jewish character. I mean, you know, we have to acknowledge at some point that he is playing a very big stereotype with Jill in this movie. But I am not the right person to address it at all.
I mean, you're closer to Judaism than I ever will be. A fact of the matter.
Maybe I'll just look into a little bit more about how people feel about his portrayal of these characters before we get into something like an Eight Crazy Nights. But man, like the character he's playing here, there are moments where I am just like, should I be clenching my butthole as much as I am right now? Because I kinda am.
I've never had Mexican food. They don't make it at my deli. No, they wouldn't. I imagine that they wouldn't make Mexican food at your deli, Jill.
Oh my god. But yeah. So I thought you were going to say that, like, yes, that's a character we've met before. Also, this is a good moment to just shout out to just all of the, like, the old school cast that shows back up, because it was hard for me to pick. Alan Covert definitely gets the gold for me all the time. So, like, sorry. But, like, I mean, we already mentioned Nick Swardson. How could we not mention Tim Meadows, who we adored in Hubie Halloween?
But I feel like this is the first time that Nick Swardson shows up in a film with Adam Sandler, because he's a big part of Grandma's Boy with Alan Covert. Terrific, a Happy Madison production. But I feel like this is the first time, because he does Benchwarmers too. So he's definitely been around. He's adjacent to the ASCU. And I think this is the time that he shows up and gets to work with Adam. And I'm fairly certain that, like, weird antagonism between them is exactly what gets him the role of Cousin Jeffrey in Just Go With It.
I was going to mention, not for us on the ASCU, though, because as we have pointed out right. in the past, the role of Cousin Jeffrey with the phenomenal, terrible German accent for the back half of that film.
Oh, my God. That, like, at one point, I'm like, I might try to recreate this for a bit. And then I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it.
No, I'm not going
to
do that.
I'm going to be better than that. I have to be the change I wish to see in the world. I also feel like, and again, we've seen Tim Meadows before, but by all accounts, this feels like the first time that Tim Meadows gets to show up and do his whole shtick in an Adam Sandler film. And maybe there's one chronologically before it, but this really felt like the first time he got to play as well. And I also want to give another shout out, but mostly because I shouted out Michael Buscemi in Blended. Gary Valentine as the director of the Pepto-Bismol commercial. We've seen him before and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, but he's also Kevin James's biological brother. Kevin James being a stage name. Yeah. So, like, it's nice. I really love that not only does Adam Sandler have this, like, huge cadre of people that he's able to, like, say, hey, I'm making a movie. Do you want to be a part of it? Do you want a scene? And they come. But when they're not able to come, that they have understudies who are like, willing and able to jump in and take the spot for them.
Oh, I mean, to that point, I mean, God love the Farley family, like fucking John Farley showing up in this movie. Yeah. Like, you know, like there's that going on there. And then, I mean, dipping back into the old Sandler filmmaking, Dennis Duggan shows up in a phenomenal moment as Al Pacino's understudy that's like, you want me to take over for this? Like, and that's the guy that we've seen that has directed a couple of movies we've talked about, or at least
he's
have
directing
mentioned
this movie.
Is he the director
for
Jack and Jill?
He's the director of Jack and Jill, which makes it even better because it's a director cameo trying to, like, be the understudy for Al Pacino. It is, there's all sorts of levels.
We've seen him with Happy Gilmore, and we've mentioned Zohan and Big Daddy. I did not realize that
he
was also
as well, which is, I think, another reason why people were willing to give this one a chance, because up to this one, the two of them were kind of making gold.
Yeah.
But yes, so... Oh, and I guess just the last one is David Spade, Dennis being his character from Just Shoot Me, showing up again in this time playing a female character, not the character that he did in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, but it's definitely the first time that we have seen David Spade in an ASCU film and playing Monica, Jack's ex from high school.
Yep.
AKA the cheese tray.
Well, we've done a ton of shout outs for old. I mean, it was kind of hard not to with this movie, right?
Like I said, right at the top of this thing, while we were still with Will, this film would have done what Hubie Halloween did for the discussion about a shared cinematic universe had it hit better than it did.
I mean, I feel like you're avoiding what might be the most contentious moment here, and that is going to be our borrowed.
Maybe.
Now, Devin, for those out there, for those to know what just kind of the history of this moment here is, before we got started, you told me, like, I hope you don't have my borrowed. That's really important. I got my borrowed. You can't trample on my borrowed. And, like, we've had that conversation before, and we have said to each other, you should go first, because in case it is that thing, I'll pivot. But you didn't even say that. So what I did instead is I took a screenshot of one of my many possible borrowed's and then sent it to you and put a spoiler warning on it so you had not yet seen it, because I'm pretty sure that's going to be the thing you talk about. But if it's not, we should talk about it.
Excellent.
Go nuts.
And I haven't seen it. I have not seen this. But it is timestamped so that I know that Siegen is not making up or pivoting. But Siege, why don't you go first? I honestly, if you get where I got with this, I will be very surprised.
Okay, so the easiest one to go with would be the man in a dress stuff, right? Like that kind of thing that's on display here. And that is not new to the Say Report, not new to just like comedy. Like that is definitely something that we should look at. But I actually think that there's something really interesting about this movie, in that everybody wants to make jokes about oh, that's the Adam Sandler and a Dres movie, blah, blah, blah. But Devin pointed out earlier is that really the selling point of this movie is not Adam Sandler and a Dres, but Adam Sandler playing two roles. And it's the dual role nature that I feel like is really the thing that he leans more into for the comedy in this movie. It's funnier to see Adam Sandler fighting with himself on screen than I think the joke about it being a man in a dress, because that's not what comes up, because it's not like Tootsie style man in a dress. It, like, Jill is a female character. Like, we are to understand, respect, and like acknowledge that Jill is a woman, right? So the joke can't be like he can't lean on the like, oh, they look kind of manly, because they're not a man. So those jokes don't really play. So instead, a lot of the comedy in this movie is really about seeing two of the same actor in the same space and the ways in which that is played with. And that is not new to comedy either. That goes all the way back to even like the Three Stooges, where there are episodes where like Shemp will play like himself, a woman, and the baby in the same episode. Like, there's just like, So the dual role jokes are really kind of where I wanted to kind of point the focus, because it's really easy to point the focus at Adam Sandler playing a female character. But I actually don't think this movie depends on that for the comedy as much as like the marketing wanted you to think that was the joke.
Yeah, and actually, I think that's a problem of the marketing. We talk a lot about marketing just not understanding a film as it goes forward and presents itself to the world. And that misunderstanding of this film being about Adam Sandler in dual roles and instead making it Adam Sandler's playing a woman is a huge misstep. Huge misstep. I mean, this film has so much twimmetry that the dual roles are clearly what is meant to be front and center.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider that Eugenio Derbez plays his grandmother in the scene in the park.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so this was the thing. The fact that one of the places Jill visits with Sophie, her niece, is My Tiny Me. And like that character, that the daughter's character is sort of obsessed with the fact that she doesn't have a twin, to the fact that she is constantly creating dolls who look like her and mirror what she is doing.
Yeah.
It's this huge part of the film.
Yeah,
that is way downplayed by the
real the real reason that I think that you can really kind of point to, this is going to be kind of like proof from a negative, which is really rare, but I think it actually works here, is that whenever the joke is this is a man just in drag, which is, you know, the joke, I will point to the best example out there, the best received example out there, Mrs. Doubtfire. There are no less than three scenes in that movie in which you see him mid quote unquote transition. I put quotes around that because the word transition is a very important word in certain fields. But I want to make sure that like I'm pointing to that word in its most literal sense, like mid like transformation from the male to female. So in Mrs. Doubtfire, you see Robin Williams in a fat suit at some point. There's literally a joke about his face like falling out the window and getting run over by the truck outside. There are so many moments where the humor is the man trying to become the woman and it not succeeding, that's where a lot of the humor comes from. And there is none of that in this movie. There is never a moment where you see Jill in a compromising position in which you question her gender and position in the world, right? Like, and to the point where I actually think they do a really good job in a lot of the costuming with him as Jill to really accentuate a lot of like female form in Jill and things like that. She's definitely a larger woman, I guess would be the best way of putting it, and things like that.
Voluptuous is the word that springs to mind for me.
But that's the bit, right? Is like, she's not undesirable. We see like character after character throughout this movie kind of fall for her and her charm, but also her looks and things like that. So it's really interesting to me, because I think for a long time, my vision of what this movie was Adam Sandler making fun of people that were maybe outside of what we thought of as normative gender roles for a female figure. And actually, I you know, there's probably a joke or two that I'm not thinking of, but that's not the memorable bits of this movie. The memorable bits of this movie are Adam Sandler arguing with Adam Sandler.
Right. If not just for the fact that it's that clear, you have to stand here so that we can cut you here later. Like,
there's only one moment, where it is upsetting, and they, I think it's because the moment's supposed to be upsetting, but I think they lean too far into it, and that is when he's lying on the couch, and it is revealed that she is behind him, like, cradling him, and that one shot of him and her spooning him, the face on Jill is so CGI'd to be Adam Sandler's face that it looks like it's almost like a doll. And I don't know if there is like a fake Adam Sandler doll dressed up like Jill put behind him, or if it is a human being and they just like CGI over the face. It is an upsetting moment. Like I had to rewind it and watch it again to make sure that like my brain had not like broken. Like I almost feel like I missed like a frame of the movie because the face does not move. Her face does not move.
Yeah, it is. And it's also that one moment where like she comes across as creepy in her like desire to want to have like twin time or anything like that, because it's almost like she's stealing it from him. She's invading his space in like an upsetting way. It doesn't work, because a lot of the stuff in this film, like, I wonder where everybody is getting this idea that Jill is awful, because all you see are people love her. So, like, mm-hmm. where, like, it's only because Jack is telling us how awful she is that we're supposed to believe that. But then the movie kind of leans into that narrative, and it's very strange.
Yeah.
But also, you know, as you downplay the woman in the dress, the man in a dress trope, there is that moment in the film where Adam, and we're going to lead into my borrowed here, does dress up like Jill in order to trick Al Pacino into believing that Jill is interested in him. That Jill's interested in him. And first of all, I do want to just give applause for the fact that his disguise as Jill is so different from Jill. It is slimmer. Like, it's noticeable. Like, Al Pacino says to him, did you lose weight? You seem more feminine somehow. And it's a great thing. But that's going to lead into my borrowed, if you cede your time to me.
Oh, yeah, no, the borrowed section. There it is. Yeah.
What I wrote down for borrowed is Ocean's 12.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Are you talking about Jessica? Are we talking about what's her name?
We are talking about Tess.
Yeah.
Playing Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts, not Jessica Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
Jessica
who plays
Rabbit.
Tess pretending to be Julia Roberts in order to get like VIP treatment while they're in Italy. And then, oh no, here comes Bruce Willis to fuck everything up. Now, it doesn't go that far level of Bruce Willis showing up, but the fact that in this movie where Adam Sandler not only plays an Adam Sandler character, but also that character's female twin, you have Adam Sandler dress up as a woman to pretend to be that female twin that is played by Adam Sandler. All I could think of was Ocean's 12. Like, it started to happen, and I'm like, did they really fucking Ocean's 12 us in this goddamn movie? And I know that it's not just Ocean's 12. Ocean's 12 is just the easiest example for me to point at and go, really? But it's something that you touched on. It's this idea of, like, the meta humor and comedy. It's why on the Say Report we questioned if Julia Roberts invented meta with that sequence in Ocean's 12, because it is such a level that you need your audience to go along with you, that like every time you put another block on, you risk the entire tower just collapsing.
Right. And they do a really good thing in that moment, wherein that really the only person that sees him look like that is Al Pacino. There is one other person, phenomenal right. moment in the bathroom when he steps out and the attendant adjusts his breasts for him. I love that. Just that moment was beautiful. But beyond that, he doesn't run into somebody else. He doesn't like run into Nick Swartzen, who then hits on him or some dumb thing like that. Right. Like you don't get the weird bit. And again, it goes back to what I was saying, is that it's not an indictment of women, of men who are in drag or transitioning peoples or anything like that. Like, it is entirely about the idea that they are twins and they just look the same when you put a dress on them, which is like a whole other bit that needs to be like parsed in some way. But like, that is more that kind of goes back to what I was saying, is like that moment kind of really highlights the idea that the humor is not about him being in a dress. Because also the other thing about that moment is you're talking about the climax of the movie. Right. Like, that is the moment where Jack discovers what an asshole he's been this entire time. And he really, really turns around after that because of what was said to him in that moment.
Right. And, you know, I let people read the synopses that I put together for this film. And the response from everybody is, it kind of just ended abruptly, your synopsis. And I'm like, yeah, because that's what the movie does.
Yeah, that's kind of what, like, the movie does.
Jack learns that, oh, I've been a jerk this whole time. And then it's a race to the credits.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, it's kind of not satisfying.
I mean, I will say this. I mean, when I first pressed play on this movie, I said, oh, thank God it's 90 minutes. And so the fact that it stuck to that, to the point where I literally watched people run to the end of this film, I was like, thank you. Yes, film. Yes.
Right. But it just kind of happens. Like, yeah. It goes from climax to curtain much faster than most movies do. Like, there's no real wind down or wrap up. And it's fine. Like, it works. They make it work. And mostly because Jill, who has been nothing but wonderful the whole film, gets her happy ending. And, yep. and the happy ending that she deserves, right?
Yeah.
It's important and it's impressive.
I will, just because I pointed out all of this stuff about the idea of, like, is the comedy coming from men dressed as women and stuff like that, the movie will have to live in infamy for having Caitlyn Jenner in this movie called by her dead name. Like, not exactly the pinnacle of trans activism or anything like that, but a female in this world that we all have to recognize as one of the most, the most well-known transitioned peoples in this world is in this movie as their old self and called out by it and all that sort of stuff. And it has to be, because at this point in their life, like, they are kind of mid in that, right? Like, it's a weird pull to have Caitlyn Jenner in this movie. And I don't want to not acknowledge that, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm somehow saying that because this movie celebrates men dressing up in the ways that they feel. It's just, this movie is not that. It's just that it also doesn't get mean about it at any point, which is surprising, I guess.
Yeah, I was saving the whole Caitlyn Jenner of this film for the deeper discussion after we finish New Old Borrowed Blue, because there's a lot in this film that has not aged well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Enough that for an entire segment when we get past New Old Borrowed Blue. So yeah. I do have another borrowed. I do
hey,
have another.
I want to just lay the Caitlyn Jenner stuff to
oh,
rest.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I'm going to put that out there because, like, yep, she's in this movie, the end.
She's
like,
in this movie, and actually, the thing that spoke to me more is the way that she's credited now in this yeah. film. Because yeah. originally, the credits had Bruce Jenner himself, and now the credits have been updated on something like IMDb to Caitlyn Jenner, and the role is Bruce Jenner.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, I hadn't even considered, like, that level of it
yeah.
and how it looks 10 years down the road.
Well, and the shitty thing
happened that way.
So the shitty thing about that is that probably deals with things like contracts and the ways in which names are written and all that sort of stuff. Right. And that highlights what a cool move it was on Netflix's part to go back and retroactively change Elliot Page's name to their recognized name, right? Like, living name, is that the right term? I don't even know. But the idea being that, like, that Elliot Page is credited as Elliot in everything on as far as Netflix is concerned, that is what made that move so impressive, is because they had to break and recreate their own contracts in order to do that. Right. Like the legalese behind that kind of stuff is something that is probably not as appreciated as it should have been in the moment when they did that.
Well, I mean, especially when you consider the fact that a lot of it's new precedent that's being set. They're blazing right. the trail for that type of contract negotiation and contract, you know, addendums and adaptation.
Yep.
So it really is something. But then when I'm watching it, and, you know, I watch it on Amazon Prime, so I have the X-ray, which is giving me the direct view into IMDb, and
right.
I pause it there, and I see that that's what the IMDb credit is. It gave me a little bit more pause than I was ready for. But then yep. there's a lot in this movie that gives me pause, and we really only have Blue, and I think it's going to go quick, I'm not going to lie. but before we get to Blue, yeah. for Borrowed, I want to make sure, I do have another thing written down, and maybe this is it. I have When Harry Met Sally as something that is very heavily borrowed from, with the whole confessionals from real life twins that start and end this movie. Because it's like the real life couples talking about yeah. how they met each other. And
look,
I'm just like, old school Hollywood strikes again.
I maybe have to take a note or two back then, because this movie opens with that, and I wrote quite angrily at the time, gotta love a premise that requires the film open up with a "we swear this is possible" conversation. But you do point out that one of the most beloved films of all time opens up with that exact problem too.
Yeah. Like,
The movie has to convince you that what it's about to show you is actually a possible thing in this world, and it's just like, we get it, twins exist, move on.
The bigger difference between like Jack and Jill and When Harry Met Sally is that When Harry Met Sally throughout the film is continuing to remind you of the fact that these type of relationships are real. Where Jack and Jill, it somehow makes it work at the beginning and at the end. Though I will point out where I think it is a huge misstep is they only have identical identical twins are always the same gender, right? So Jack and Jill are fraternal twins, unless
right,
you
right.
want to get into Turner syndrome. And honestly, we are not a medical podcast. The ASCU is not a medical podcast. Say Report, maybe we would flirt with a little bit of Turner syndrome and what that actually means. Because it's a crossover, I will say it is when the embryo splits in the way that identical twins are formed, one of the babies loses the Y chromosome, making it genetically female at birth.
Right.
And that's how you do that. But I don't think that's the case between Jack and Jill. I think it is literally the fact that they are fraternal twins, but Dale and I look very similar to each other because we come from the same genetic, like, pile.
Right, right, right.
right. So,
yeah.
So it's one of those situations where they're not identical twins, Jack and Jill. They're very much fraternal twins. And the fact that all of those confessionals are from identical twins and thus same gender twins,
yeah.
It's not only is it's saying this is something that can happen in the world, but it's something that can happen, but it really doesn't have any fucking bearing on what we're about to see in this movie. Like, if they were able to find fraternal twins, male, female, and talk about what that means, that would have a lot more punch. And in fact, I was so bothered by a phrase that kept getting used in those interviews that I ended up reaching out to some of my friends who are twins to see if, first of all, I asked them how they feel about this movie and its portrayal of twins, right? Because on a very real level, I was afraid that we were going to be alienating the very lucrative twin demographic by doing this film.
Yeah.
And those who got back to me, they had not seen the film, so they could not speak intelligently about Jack and Jill. But I did have a follow-up question, and that is, three sets of twins compare having a twin to marriage.
Yeah.
And that felt so off fucking base for me. It felt so much like the filmmakers trying to push that narrative of the, like, closeness that they say Jill kind of wants with her brother, but then you don't really see except for that one Uncanny Valley scene that you referenced.
And I gotta say, though, he has a closer relationship with Jill in this movie than he ever does with Katie Holmes, who we have not yet once mentioned, and it is literally because she is nothing in this movie. Like, sorry, like, I really like Katie Holmes. I think she does a phenomenal job as Rachel in the Batman movies, literally inventing a character that never existed in that series before. Like, I just cannot believe the amount of just like dead air that they give his wife character. Meanwhile, we're focused so hardcore on his relationship with his sister. So like, it's interesting because it does feel like the movie really wants to lean that way in a lot of really weird ways. But then like the story never does. It's very bizarre.
Yeah. But that's the thing. So I asked about it and the people who got back to me, right, where I'm like, you know, it just felt strange to me. They said, actually, that's kind of an apt description of what it's like to have a twin, because, you know, it's not just that you have a sibling, right? Because the sibling dynamic leads into it. But there is also the fact that you're trying to live your own life and be your own person. But so often you're just invariably tied to this other person, and who they are, unfortunately, reflects what you do and who you are and how you're able to develop yourself. And like, I'm very thankful to get that, because to me, somebody who only has a sibling, I don't have a twin, right? That's not going to be the secret reveal of the Jack and Jill episode
that we know of.
Right. He lives in the attic and he makes pigeon rats.
nice.
And I've been the evil twin all along, which really would track. Let's just be honest about it. But it's one of those situations where like, I figured it's like, it's going to be a sibling dynamic, but I didn't realize that like that level of like being tied to another person. And I think that's because a lot of first of all, I try to treat everybody as their own person. I try to take everybody on a one-on-one level. And like a lot of the twins that I reached out to, I'm really only close to one and not really the pair of them. Right. Which comes down to it. Like, especially, like, one set of them, I know the other one doesn't like me because of my friendship with her sister. So, but I still reached out to both of them to see if they'd be willing to offer the information. And it was very interesting to hear that straight from somebody who grew up as a twin and having a twin sibling, confirm that that is actually a feeling that could pass through your mind. It was helpful to better understand this film for me.
Yeah,
and it being an actual thing that does happen, but again, it's all completely out the fucking window when it's sets of identical twins, and then the movie is about a pair of fraternal twins who are different genders. It's strange. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah,
but
you got one less category to address, my friend.
I am. Yeah. Well, I want to know what the bar you thought I was gonna say was.
So, I thought you were going to talk about how the original nursery rhyme for Jack and Jill was indeed actually Jack and Gil. It was two brothers that went up the hill and misbehaved. So, I thought that was what you were going to pull out of your ass, is that it was really quickly co-opted by various versions, like, you know, Hans Christian Andersen, blah, 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 fairy tales get told and retold and all that. But they have found really early versions of this particular nursery rhyme that actually reference them as two brothers. And so the turning of one into a female character and things like that, it's one of those things where, like, remove anything else about this movie, the choice to have Adam Sandler play a male and female character and then name it Jack and Jill, like, it doesn't lead to any jokes or anything in the movie or anything like that. Like, where does that come from? And it feels almost like, well, if it's not surface level, then it must be super deep. So you look a little deeper into it and you realize, oh, there's this history of those two. But then you think about it and you think, no, that doesn't work either. So like, it's really weird. So I thought you were going to bring that up and I was going to talk about how beautiful that is, but at the end of the day means nothing. So I was really ready to fight you on it.
What would have really worked, right, and could have beautifully tied this into the ASCU, and in fact, introducing us to Well, no, because he's a plastic surgeon. There's no dentist. I'm getting confused with horrible bosses again. It would be great if Jack, at some point in this movie, took a fall and broke, like, a crown over one of his teeth and had to go see a dentist, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's lean into the Jack and Jill.
So what is the point of the title at the end of the day? That's all. Right. That's all. It's just like, what really is the point of this title? I don't think there really is one. And it just kind of speaks volumes to what the rest of this movie is. Is like, but why though? Is kind of consistently just all you ever ask. That's all.
It's quick, snappy, and good for marketing, because you say Jack and Jill, it rolls off the tongue because you've been saying it since you were 4 years old in preschool. So it sticks in your mind, right? I think one of the reasons that this movie is able to persist in meme culture and everything like that is because it has a name like Jack and Jill. And also, I mean, just because it's borrowed, and we've dumped so much time into Borrowed already, is the fact that this is a rip-off remake of Glenn or Glenda.
Yeah, Glenn or Glenda.
So, I mean, just credit where credit's due. And into the blue. And I will go first, because it's my turn, based on how we've been doing it. It is Jill's dress when she emerges for Fun Bucket and comes down the stairs to the picture-perfect Barry Manilow song. Because it's so distinctly Barry Manilow, but it's not like one of his main hits that everybody knows.
And for anybody that isn't aware of what we're talking about because they haven't watched the movie, the reason that that works so well is because Jill has, well, it wasn't Jill's choice, right?
No, it was Jill's choice. She's asked for her username, and she goes, oh, put down Manilow, because he can use me anytime.
Yeah, so Barry Manilow is the name that she chooses for her alias online.
She just uses Manilow, which also, like, that I would get right off of soulmate.net, because if you can get the username Manilow without a single letter or underscore, there's not a lot of people on that website.
Yeah, so then to then use Barry Manilow as she comes down the stairs. Yeah. He loves the down the stairs moment, doesn't he?
He loves the on the stairs moment, and also the she's all that, like, emerge, and that dress is so beautiful. The whole outfit is beautiful, right down to the little fur cap that she has on and the wrap. I love that dress. I say yes to Jill's dress,
and it just happened to be beautiful blue, peacock blue, baby. I think it's a fantastic example of what I was talking about earlier, is that when it is Sandler playing Jill, the ways in which they don't make a joke out of her costuming or anything like that, or her shape or her size and all that, like, that is a perfect example of it, is that she does look like she is about to go out on a date and all that sort of stuff. It just highlights that.
Very good. Now ruin my faith in humanity with your blue, CJ.
Well, so at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that even though they are not focusing on that as the joke, that is the visual picture that they're putting out. And it is the cross dressing that goes on in this movie is never addressed to the point where it starts to kind of become ridiculous. And I only say that because we then eventually see people like David Spade show up. It isn't until that moment at the end where quote unquote cross-dressing becomes a joke. So it's no longer that it's a female character. It kind of ruins what is otherwise a somewhat surprising celebration of this character of Jill, is that suddenly now the joke is we're just going to watch Adam Sandler and all of his friends put dresses on. And so that is my blue moment, because of how much it ruins so much rather progressive sense that is kind of present in the rest of the movie. And it shows that the movie is not progressive, but rather it's just not being offensive. And those are not the same thing. And we need to make sure that we acknowledge that. So the fact that the movie is not offensive to anybody that is out there, like, exploring their gender or sexuality is great and all. And the fact that, like, we would expect an Adam Sandler movie to maybe do that, and the fact that it doesn't is great and all, but that is not progress.
No, it's not. It actually begins to impede progress.
Right.
It's I mean, because it's really great that it's just the fact that Adam Sandler is playing a male character and his female twin sister. And we're not, there are a couple of ones where, like, no, she's not a guy, right? Like at the soccer game and when she's lifting the weights on the cruise ship. Like there are those moments that happen, but very rarely is it the joke. It is Adam Sandler committing to playing that role.
Right.
And even though it is also David Spade committing to playing that role, it goes into that absurd. Like Eugenio Derbez, when he plays his grandmother, like that works in a better way because you wouldn't know it if you didn't know it, right?
Well, and on top of that, the character the joke is not that it's him in a dress.
Right.
The character has other comedy about it, right? Like the glasses and the look and everything about what he does in that moment.
Yeah,
and is funny. And it's not that it's him in a dress. It's funny because that character is upsettingly funny.
Yeah. But then once you get to the David Spade of it, I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about this right here. It makes me question the world of this movie a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and is David Spade supposed to be playing the same character from Chuck and Larry? And it actually made me go out and dig out a copy of Chuck and Larry to confirm that his moment is a homosexual male dressing up as a woman.
Right.
And it's not supposed to be Monica. It's not some connection between those two movies.
Yeah.
All right. So that's New Old Borrowed Blue. That's an extended edition of New Old Borrowed Blue because of what this film is, because of what Jack and Jill is.
Yeah.
And now we get to really, I mean, we've discussed already, but the main discussion, those points that are still out there that still exist that we feel need to be addressed before we make our final decision on whether or not this gets induction into our Adam Sandler cinematic universe.
I think one of the other reasons that this movie really kind of suffers in terms of the history, like it doesn't hold up well and stuff like that, is not just because there are jokes that don't age well, but there are so many jokes that are so time specific. And the best example of that is Al Pacino's whole motivation in this movie to like get back on top and all of that sort of stuff and figure out like his career and all that is because of his Patti LuPone moment where he screams at somebody with a cell phone. Which both sets off his whole trajectory, but then also doesn't really matter much in his whole trajectory. It's really weird. Like the ways in which that is the bit for him to be introduced is him yelling at somebody for having a cell phone in the audience, which is like directly pulled from a moment in, I believe, 2009, maybe 2010. Like that's how quick they've shoved it into this film.
Yeah, we were moment still in of Patti LuPone on stage. Happened because yeah. It was a big talk about, wouldn't you love to do that? And then yeah. I wasn't an acting kid, but it was all the actors saying, wouldn't you love to get to do that? And I turned around like, no, I fucking wouldn't. It's hyper unprofessional. Would it be cathartic? Yes. But if you're supposed to be this professional actor, you deal with it. The show goes on.
Yeah, right? I'm not going to sit here and rip apart Patti LuPone for after all of her career. Finally having enough is enough. I'm not saying that I wouldn't enjoy it. Let me put it that way. I get what you're saying, and that is literally the discussion that happened at the time was it a cathartic moment for an actress on stage, or was it unprofessional? This is the bit, right? And like, but the idea being that it is something that happened, something everybody talked about for like a hot second, somebody on the set of this movie threw it into the script, and then we put it on screen, and lo and behold, nobody remembers the moment it's referencing, right? Yeah. And then it just becomes a joke about Al Pacino just being an asshole on stage. And that doesn't quite work as well as the zeitgeist topic of the moment joke it was when this movie first was made.
I mean, you say Patti LuPone, I think that Hugh Jackman also had a moment with a cell phone.
What year was that?
That was one earlier as well when we were still in college. Like it was a thing that was happening. It was this thing of like because of cell phones in theaters, like live theater, people were breaking character to address the people with the phones, and it does feel very of the moment, to the fact that. The big one for me was when they're in the movie theater watching Some Like It Hot. Let's shout out that they go to a Thanksgiving showing of Some Like It Hot in the middle of this movie for what is one of the best bits of comedy. Just Adam as Jack and Jill, perfect mirroring the same stuff from the two of them. And I have to imagine that he just did it twice, right? Once while dressed as Jill and once while dressed as Jack.
Yeah, which is you're right.
Even more impressive in terms of like matching the choreography and everything about it. Like it sings. That whole sequence sings. And she picks up the cell phone and just has a conversation. Now, I don't know if it's because I haven't really been to the movie theater for almost 2 years, but like I forgot that cell phones were such a plague of enjoying a film in the theater, to the point that it would be referenced as a joke in this movie.
Yeah, it's a weird relic because everything I've done in the last year in terms of going back out to movies and stuff like that, I think people have been so happy to be there that they haven't done that. But I do remember there being moments of like kids like pulling out cell phones and texting during stuff and parents like rushing to make them put it away, or like going to things like going to the extended edition of Hateful Eight and there being like a guy like two rows down that took his phone out like halfway through, and like, and people in the audience, like clearly like a wave over the audience of people just being like, really? Like not only you did you come to a movie and behave this way, but you kind of came to like a special event movie and did it that way? Really? Like that, and that feeling like coming across was just like, oh no, now I can't enjoy the movie myself, because yeah, it's like, so I do remember those moments, but I have not had one myself in such a long time that I agree. I forget what a thing it was. I just didn't realize it was such a big Broadway thing. I'm sitting here reading about Hugh Jackman yelling at somebody that I didn't even remember.
Yeah, it was a thing that was happening at the time. So like, I mean, for me, it was Hugh Jackman because, you know, that's more the demographic that people were going to be talking about on our college campus.
For sure, but Patti LuPone. Yeah.
Patti LuPone was that I remember. Very reminiscent of what Al Pacino does in this
right,
movie.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like Al Pacino's whole speech is almost word for word what she said to this person in the audience, being like, "Are you gonna get it?" was essentially like the attitude of that moment. Like, whereas apparently the Hugh Jackman one was him basically like putting his hand up and telling like, from what I'm understanding, Daniel Craig was on stage with him,
yeah.
And he like silenced Daniel Craig just to wait until the cell phone stopped singing, and then it's ringing, and then he went back into it. So like that was a much more still upsetting and acknowledging moment of what was going on, but like Patti LuPone was the one that I remember like I think answering the phone, like going fucking haywire with it.
She's the, yeah, it's very clearly Patti LuPone that is being mirrored there, but when I'm thinking like demographic that's gonna understand this joke, it's Hugh Jackman story. And it feels more like that. And then it's that classic Adam Sandler thing of like, well, everybody's going to understand this because of Hugh Jackman, right?
Right.
But those people who truly understand it are going to know that we are mirroring this thing that happened with Patti LuPone. But the thing that really just makes that whole Al Pacino freak out doing Richard III work is when his phone is the one ringing on stage.
Right, right, right. Later, he ends up being the one that answers it on stage, and it just sends it to a whole other level. It's just really weird because, like, the bit only becomes nowadays this idea of what a crazy person Al Pacino.
He changed his name from Al to Dunk, and it should be Dunk Pacino, but I'm an asshole for asking.
All right, all right.
But yeah, it's how weird he is. It completely loses any of the meaning when it happens for the first time in 2011. And that's a point, and it's true. There's nothing else to say about it. But I do like, what I think is interesting is when he answers the phone on stage, that's when he reconnects with the audience, because he does the lines from The Godfather, and the guy who's just like, is the best thing I've ever seen on stage ever. Is Al Pacino dressed as Richard III doing The Godfather on a cell phone? And like, to the fact that afterwards he goes, audience, where was I? And they feed him the line, and his performance is so much better. Like, I don't know. I also really like, you know, that Caitlyn Jenner has their phone as well.
Yeah,
and is like ready to take it out and mess like around,
texting on the kick phone that they have there. Yeah.
It's a good all around like bit of just, how, because you also need to understand the iPhone and like that whole culture is really only 11 years old.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, it really, what this film demonstrates is how much the world has changed in the past 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
using Caitlyn Jenner as a jumping off point, there's the fact that Jared Fogle is in this film with two very young women as his dates.
Mm-hmm.
I can only find the name of one, Ashley Spiegel. She is the one who is closest to him in the scene. So the girl who looks even younger, I cannot find her name anywhere. And I looked and looked, but Ashley Spiegel at the time was 25 to Jared's 34. So like, there's nothing hinky going on in the film other than the fact that Jared Fogle is there. And it's hilarious that Jared Fogle is in this movie.
Yeah, the movie just, it is such a product of its moment in those jokes, and that sucks, because that's not how you make everlasting timeless comedy. You don't tie it to specific bits that only work in 2011.
Right. But then it's made even worse by the fact that so many of the like flash in the pan celebrities that they feature in this film, like how things have progressed in the last 10 years.
Don't be like that to Johnny Depp.
I mean, but Johnny Depp is certainly a moment in the film. There's the fact that Regis Philbin, he's playing an exaggerated version of himself. So, like, nice guy Regis Philbin in one of his film appearances is kind of an asshole. And now,
is this the moment that I get to
Regis Philbin?
Do I get to? Yeah, I mean, he's amazing in that moment. Yeah. Do I also get to celebrate in that second? Fucking Dana Carvey.
Yeah, I can't believe we didn't bring him up while we were talking about old.
He's only in it for a moment, but it's a beautiful moment. Bob Ross, like a motherfucker, and the line, "I have Sesame Street at 8 o'clock." It's just like, ah, yeah. It's such a great, goofy ass moment for him to show up.
And his first time on screen since Master of Disguise.
Damn.
Which, so like 10 years since the last time we saw him in a movie, him coming out for that one scene and really nothing else. And that's just something that is mentionable, and we didn't do it. But then, like, the fact that Regis Philbin has passed away, and then, like, to see him in that role, it's like, oh, that's upsetting, and it's sad. And also, Kobe Bryant having, like, that big moment where he slam dunks, and then I'm like, Jack and Jill, you're not supposed to make me sad about real-world things that have happened. That's that's not why I'm watching you, Jack and Jill. I'm watching you for the Adam Sandler, like, absurdist comedy. And
Shaq's back. We gotta shout that out real quick. Shaq's back for a moment in this one.
Shaq's back. Hammer lemma ding dong. Well, who decided on the wig? Oh, he did. That was his decision. Oh, he looks nothing like Shaq. That's good. That's good when we hire Shaq. Shaq is exceptional in his hammer lemma ding dong. And I actually think, like, real credit to the metaverse of this movie, not the metaverse, right? That's Facebook, and that's a different thing, and Will touched on it. But the meta of this film, where he's like, oh, you said the same thing about Brad Pitt in the Radio Shack commercial. Yeah, and he didn't do it. Like, oh, they tried to get Brad Pitt for Jack and Jill, didn't they? Didn't they try to get Brad Pitt for Jack and Jill? And he's like, oh, no, I'm working on 12 Years a Slave. Good luck.
Imagine if he had been in the Al Pacino role. Oh, my God.
It would have been a completely different movie. It would have elevated my feeling that this film borrowed heavily from Ocean's 12 and not the antagonist of Ocean's 13 being in that scene.
Yeah,
I hate how much I know about movies sometime. It's rare, but they come through every once in a while.
Man.
But yeah, it's one of those sequences, and it's, I don't know, just the stuff in this film that like made me uncomfortable, because they didn't, like, we weren't doing our due diligence back then, right? Like, that's the thing that we do now. And for better or for ill, right? Cancel culture is its whole other thing. And it's something that we talk about more on the Say Report. It's not really an ASCU thing. But this film, with the, like, huge amount of people that it pulls forward to show up in at Jack and Jill's birthday party, and just how many of those things, like, went off the rails and are now entombed in this film forever.
Yep.
It is unfortunate.
Yep.
And that's just the best way to say it.
Yeah, man. Well, we're getting dangerously close with our introduction with poor Will and our time talking about this movie of being twice as long as this film. So I don't really have many notes left. I do want to point out that once again, I did talk about the facial moment with Jack and Jill earlier, but the CGI in this film never gets better. The other moment that's just off-puttingly horrible is Poopsie in the chocolate fountain. It's just like, it's the most kind of like Alvin and the Chipmunk style CGI you see in this movie, but it's there.
What was our obsession with filming movies on cruise ships from like 2010 to 2012?
I thought you were going to ask what our obsession is still to this day with CGI tiny animal creatures in our movie otherwise populated by just normal humans. And I don't know. I don't know why that always works for people.
This
isn't the same year as The Smurfs was out, by the way, just to point that out.
Jeez. And that movie, and that's also Sony, isn't it?
So I believe like, so, yeah.
That's much better CGI than this. Of course, I haven't seen the Smurfs movie since it released, so maybe
you know Hank Azaria is real, right? He's not CGI
I
in that
do
movie.
Know that
I
Hank
just want to
Azaria
remind you.
Is real
okay.
In that
okay.
movie.
Okay. No, I think part of it is because the focus of that film is these tiny little CGI characters. In this movie, there is a very real bird, except for key moments. That moment when it's in the chocolate fountain. That moment when he opens the window. That moment when when it's crawling around on Jill's back. There's all sorts of moments where they didn't have to CGI that bird into the scene. Yeah. And I don't know why.
There's also the CGI hamster that if we had watched Bedtime Stories, I would have looked into if it's supposed to be the same hamster from Bedtime Stories.
Oh, my God. What a weird pull it would have been.
But it's certainly one of those moments where I'm like, never saw a hamster before. Now this kid's got one taped to his back. I'm thinking Bedtime Stories. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's almost everything that I have note-wise talking about those things. Which brings us to the big question. Is Jack and Jill going to have a spot in our Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe, CJ?
Okay, here's the thing. I think it does. And I think that the Sandler that is the focus is Jill. I think if you were going to get a team of Sandlers together, I don't think Jack's invited, but Jill sure is.
I mean, I almost feel like Jack is somehow used by the League of Evil Sandler villains.
Right, right.
be it for accidental intel that Jill reveals to him, be it he is the one who is kidnapped because they know that she will move heaven and earth to save him. And even if the rest of the heroes are like, this isn't our fight, we don't need to deal with them yet on their terms, she would for damn sure go all Batman and try to do it on her own. This is definitely in the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
If only because of Otto, and Otto being such a heavy tie to Happy Gilmore, right? Which is also firmly in the cinematic universe.
Well, there's also another one, McEnroe showing back up is a little bit of a tie as well. Not one we've talked about yet, but like there's many references to some old moments in Sandler films here that like I think he fully intends this to be connected to those other movies. But yeah, I mean like Otto is like the kind of like the with a bullet, right?
Yes, it's well, no, the with a bullet, and I really am sorry that we have talked for so long, right? But we're nowhere near Justice League territory yet, so I'm not feeling too bad. Is the fact that I have developed a new hypothesis for the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe.
Oh.
And I'm ready to share it. I think I'm ready to share it. And that is that in-universe, all of Adam Sandler movies exist, right? Very much like how Terminator still exists in the Last Action Hero universe of Jack Slater, but it's Sly Stallone who's playing the role of the T-1000.
Okay.
I've been psyching myself to have this conversation, and I'm still not ready. I'm very sorry about that fact. However, What I believe, what I think is true, is Rob Schneider is Adam Sandler in all of the Adam Sandler films that are part of the ASCU.
Wait. So in the ASCU, in which Billy Madison is a real human being, there is also a Billy Madison movie just played by Rob Schneider?
There is a movie that is reminiscent of Billy Madison, maybe not called Billy Madison.
Called, like, Tilly Radison or some nonsense?
Yeah, Tilly Radison, right? Rob Schneider plays Adam Sandler's roles. And the reason for that is... we haven't really had, like, Waterboy Little Nicky, they're in there, right? But he plays the townie character, and the townie character, for all intents and purposes, might be Dr. Fucking Who. And we're not right. there yet for me to completely reveal that hypothesis. But it the reason why I say it is that moment at Valentino's where Jill says, you know, I'll have you know, I did spend a night with a very famous actor. And that group of Adam Sandler flunkies says, yeah, who? Rob Schneider? So in that moment, Rob Schneider exists in this universe. So if Rob Schneider's going to exist in our ASCU, what role is he going to fill that's the response? Mm-hmm. And Rob Schneider... And again, I mean, this is a very new hypothesis. This is something that I've ruminated on, especially when you consider that films such as, like 50 First Dates aren't in there, where you have a character like Ula who is doing the Happy Gilmore thing and everybody's saying like, that's a ridiculous thing. It might change that, because if Ula saw Rob Schneider do it in a movie, that's a whole different element.
Okay. I would have to do a little bit more pondering on this. Right now, I'm willing to go as far as saying Rob Schneider might be the Watcher. but we'll get more into that, I think.
Right. It's just one of those situations where, like, when Rob Schneider was the Adam Sandler-esque character that group of high school friends used, it made me wonder about what Rob Schneider's role in our ASCU could be. And the easiest place for him to slot in would be into every Adam Sandler movie. And we haven't touched the animal. I don't know if we'll ever touch the animal. But Adam Sandler very much becomes the Rob Schneider role in that movie.
Ooh, damn. Oh, damn. So is the animal... a movie in this universe.
Or
oh no.
Something
oh,
that
no.
break through from okay. the ASCU into okay. ours.
I can't. Okay. Not right now. Not tonight.
No. But we're talking about meta stuff, right? So it's I know it's late. I know we've been talking for a long time, but it is a hypothesis that I wanted to introduce to deeper discussion in this universe.
This is not Julia Roberts running into Bruce Willis at a museum too meta for me to really appreciate.
Yeah. I'm just writing something down. If you want to vamp while I do that.
Oh my. Devin's taking notes. Well, no. So this is it, folks. For anybody out there that is visiting us from the Say Report, welcome to the ASCU. This is what we do. And as you see, it doesn't stop us from going on rants. It's just that we try not to let them go too far. We do try to bring them on back. And anyone visiting here from the ASCU, this is what we do in the Say Report. We kind of get into a little bit of everything, and we're a little bit more loosey-goosey. And for anybody that wants to know, when we're willing to kind of talk about something other than Adam Sandler, check it out, because it's been fun. We just did episode 250, right, Dev?
250 was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the one that we just released was 253. So there's plenty of content at the Say Report. And if you're visiting us from the Say Report island of things, this is the 11th movie that we've looked at in the universe. No, this is the 12th movie that we've looked at in the universe. I don't know why I keep messing that up. So there's only 11 other episodes to listen to catch up with our journey and our curation.
And they
of...
are not all 3 hours long. I
no,
promise
this
you
is,
that.
This is 3 hours long because it's a special crossover episode. with an hour of Say Report and then 2 hours of the ASCU. So generally the ASCU episodes, they tend to be 2 hours because we try to make them the length of the movie, right? Just so you know what you're getting into if you come at it. But again, remember, this is our like view of the universe. This is the universe that we're building based upon the information that we collect. We're not saying that we're the end all be all. Watch these movies, develop your own Adam Sandler cinematic universe, compare it against ours. I'd love to have that discussion. I'd love to talk and see why you think maybe Jack and Jill doesn't fit into the universe, even though you have Otto and so many other like pinpoints of light that connect them. Because that's the main point behind both of these shows is to inspire conversation.
Yep. Yeah. So with that in mind, Dev, I am ready to sign off, but is there something else you wanted to add? You were writing.
Yeah, no. Well, I was just making sure that I got my hypothesis down and that it broke your brain just a little bit during this one. I like to have that note there. But the most important thing to add, we've mentioned it a couple of times. The season 2 finale is going to be dropping on December 10th. And we are looking at 8 Crazy Nights, another Adam and... Again, Adam and Adam Sandler, which I think in the wake of Jack and Jill will be very interesting, but it's also the first time that we're looking at an animated film. So if you want to be prepared, if you want to do the homework, 8 Crazy Nights is the movie that you want to watch before we do the next episode.
And Hanukkah's early this year, folks, so you can even watch it before we get to that drop.
Yeah. Well put. So I guess the last thing that I want to say is... I hope you all had a very happy Thanksgiving. You're having a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us for this piece, which is, what's it? I'm trying to do the math here. 12 times longer than Alice's Restaurant. So I'm not saying it has to become the same type of tradition as listening to Alice's Restaurant, but, you know, it's an option, right? Sometimes you want to talk about Jack and Jill. Sometimes you don't. I also want to extend another big thank you to the Quizmaster General from the Say Report, Will, for taking a time out of his busy schedule and administering the very first Adam Sandler-centric quiz that we have ever done on either of these shows. And I hope that we see a lot more of those. Anything from you, Siege?
I did damn well on that quiz.
You
That's
did. I honestly, like... You should have won it. You should. Why would I say Hotel Transylvania 3? Why would I say Hotel Transylvania 3?
You pulled it round right at the end. It was the only way that could have ended. No, yeah. Man, that was good. I hope you guys are having a happy holiday as well. That's all.
Yeah. All right. So until next time, please just remember, we have no idea what we're doing. Have a great one, folks. Thank you so much for listening to the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe Podcast. If you like what you heard, you can subscribe so it's delivered straight to you. And why not write or review? If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, we're at the ASCU. And you can always send an electronic mail to Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe at gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Apologize to your mother for me. And we'll see you next time.